Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Mise en Minis.
We're actually calling it another episode.
Yeah, we're going to start releasing weekly.
Amusing and amusing.
All right, let's try that again. Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Mise en Minis.
We're actually calling this another episode.
God damn it, Keith.
That's amusing and amusing. This is Keith.
No, that is not going to be the intro.
That's 100% the intro.
All right. Start over.
Third time's the charm.
Right. Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Mise en Minis.
Are we actually calling this another episode?
I give up.
Music and amusing. Yes.
This is Fat Asian and I play Protector to Minoth.
This is Keith and I play lots of stuff.
This is Chad. I play Trolls.
This is Dewey, and I play Minoth, and I'm breaking into Scorn, and the only reason I'm here is because Crump has rejected these guys. I'm a sad replacement, but we'll have to go with it.
Dewey is a normal feature on our After Dark episodes, and I'll be honest, I'm frankly a little scared.
We put him in as a... let's try to allay people's fears, and Dewey has a more family-friendly story that he's brought to tell on our normal podcast. Also to entice people to come to After Dark.
Right. So Dewey's going to... We're going to call this section Story Time with Dewey. And if you want to hear more of Dewey, come to After Dark. This will be a more PC version, I'm hoping, than his normal stories.
Yeah, I mean, it happened at a softball game, so how bad could it be?
I totally read it to my mom, and she said it was okay.
All right, Dewey. The floor is yours.
Okay. So I play on a softball team on Sundays. There's a bunch of old drunk guys, you know, we're all just sitting around and like, "Hey, Darlene, I can show these boys how it's done. Get me another beer. I don't want to have to hit you again." But, you know, so it's a bunch of drunk guys playing softball. So we're out there playing, and I play second base. So I'm out there, and the guy gets up, and he smashes it to third. And our third baseman stopped it, which was amazing. I didn't know what to do. It's like, now he's going to throw it to me. And there's a guy on first, and he's running towards second. Okay, for you nerds, when someone's on first, the next place for them to go is second. When the batter hits it, he has to run to first. The guy on first has to go to second. So he's taking off. This guy's got the ball, and he looks at me, right? And I'm like, this is it. We're going to get an out. This is amazing. And he throws it at me, and I'm like, yes. And then I realize he didn't really throw it at me. He threw it to my left. So I've got to come off the bag, and it's low to the ground. So I catch this ball, and I realize the guy running from first to second has realized that he can hit me in the face, and, you know, and I'll drop the ball, and he'll be safe. So I'm like, oh, man, he's got his shoulder down. He's putting his arms up to about where my forehead is. And all of a sudden, I hear the voice of God. And he's like, Dewey. I was like, it's the voice of God. He goes, that guy's going to smash you to the ground. I'm like, indeed he is, God. He's like, this man does not know who you are. I was like, no, he doesn't. And I've got the ball in my glove. And this is all happening very fast. And God goes, you know what you need to do. I said, dick punch body slam. God said, yes, Dewey, dick punch body slam. All right, God. So this guy's coming up to me, and I've got my feet planted, so, and I've got the ball on the end of my glove, so I'm like, well, to perform the dick punch body slam, uppercut. So I'm swinging the ball up, and the guy realizes that I'm about to hit him in the stomach, so he's going to jump over me because I'm kind of low to the ground. So the ball's coming up, and he jumps, and as he's jumping, the ball in my glove reaches out and hits him in his dick. So the dick punch is performed. And so he's leaving the air. So up in the air he goes and over my head, and he lands on the ground. And God's like, dick punch body slam. Good job, Dewey. So the guy's laying on the ground, and he gets up, and he's like, why'd you punch me in the dick? I said, God came to me in the middle of that play. Now you know. I'm John Sickles. And he left the field.
All right, I'm pretty sure it's going to be an Easter egg after the credits.
Oh, man.
That was clean, dude. My mom told me.
Look, pro tip, you can't jump over the second baseman.
Yeah, if you see John effing Sickles at second base, just turn around and go home.
And don't kick me with your cleats. It's pissing me off. Next time, I'm lifting my legs and dropping an elbow in the face.
How do we top that?
I don't know. We talk about War Machine, I guess.
It's just so bland now.
Okay. So, we're just sort of busting right in this time since we've gotten... We covered news and announcements last week, and that's going to be sort of a semi-regular thing now. So we're just going to jump into some topics here. In the wake of... We talked a lot about the ranged game and how to find out if you were the ranged dominatrix or the ranged gimp tied up to the wall. Apparently, we've attached a lot of sexual overtones to this. In the same manner, there's a lot of finesse in the melee game too.
Right. So, I hadn't thought about what we're going to call this, but we want to talk about threat saturation. So, as soon as you're outgunned, what do you do? Right.
Right. You got to get in there, and it's important that you can bring to bear enough power to what you want to kill that even after they do their best to clear your crap out, that you still get to kill what you want to kill.
Yeah, because, I mean, let's be honest. I feel like melee is inherently has a higher damage potential than the range game in mm-hmm. general.
By virtue of the charge dice, that's absolutely true.
Well, you have the charge dice. You also have power per strength is often greater.
Almost always.
So they usually give more melee attacks or more abilities for doing more attacks, like threshers or...
Right. Turns out Weapon Master's a thing, right?
Right. So, yeah. Matt's higher than Rat. Weapon Master exists. PS is higher, and you get a charge dice.
Right.
Of course, you have to bring a lot and give it to the melee to come up and to get to where range is, because range is inherently stronger by virtue of getting to do it from farther away. It's better. Yeah, bad things.
It's not good for the long gunners. Same thing with, whatever. Insert X range unit here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the... And that's another thing that they did to balance ranged against melee, is once you become engaged, you don't get to shoot anymore.
Right. And then there's also, if you look at ranged beasts and warjacks in general, they typically don't have the output in melee that a good dedicated melee beast does.
Mm. So the term threat saturation, and I outlined it briefly before, but it's basically just saying that even after, it's sort of sticking your chin out and saying, do your worst, after you're done, I still get to accomplish what I want to do.
Yeah, my turn.
That's the goal of threat saturation, is to get to the point where they cannot dig you out. And a lot of times when you get to a point in the game where you're like, if I take two turns of shooting on the face, I'm done for. Like, I'll never come back in the attrition game against this particular list. Sometimes the model that you try to threat saturate is their caster. You just try to smash as many threats around their caster that they can't get away from it, and you just take them out. And that's something that more often you'll see, like, a Scorn Force do.
Yeah, particularly Emicata.
We'll talk about... someone wanted us to talk about Kator more. Like, that's, like, Epic Vlad's wheelhouse right there.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Throw as many things under the table as possible, see what lives next turn, and then power him up, juice him up and with mm-hmm. his feet and
absolutely.
Have him do something amazing.
And that's another situation where Vlad can wait forever to feed.
Sure.
He can just keep his feet and keep his feet and keep his feet. And like, looks like two Winter Guard models can charge your caster. Good game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Bear's strength.
Yeah.
Might of Kings.
What's Bear's strength? Nobody probably knows what that does.
Bear's strength, Might of Kings, Hand of Fate, Transference, Dead Caster.
Yep. Splat.
It is not a good idea to try to assassinate Epic Vlad with any kind of ranged list. I'll just throw that out there. Using P. Krios, I've shot the hell out of that guy like 50 times. And he's like, hey, he just gets stronger. I was like, how many boxes have you got? And he's like, one every single time.
That is the worst.
Yeah, well, and I've played a few games against Epic Vlad in big tournaments. And what I have found is people will feed me stuff piecemeal.
Yeah, that's what I was going to lead into.
Yeah. Yep. And if they had just like run every single model they had straight for my lines and just been like, kill what you can. Mm-hmm. I'm not invested in any of it. Whatever gets there kills you. So.
Yeah, I feel like we're spoiling the topic of an article that I'm currently working on for Muse. No, it's fine. It's because it's super interesting to talk about. It's kind of why I wanted to write it. Like, I was gonna title the article or talk about zoning in the game. Try and apply the idea of zoning from, you know, certain video games to War Machine and Hordes. And, yeah, one of the ideas is, like, if you give them only, if you only give them one model to kill and they kill it, then what did you do? You know, why did you, if you think of their army as able, only able to reach a certain portion of the board, and you only have one model in that area, in that affected area, then what's to stop them from just killing it and sitting back and not, you know, having, suffering no retaliation?
A ranged force can do that. A melee force can't. If you give one model to the effect of a melee force, it's bait. That, I would say, is good tactics against, or putting models near the effective threat range of melee models.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you can bait melee models. It's much harder to bait ranged models. Because ranged models, there's like two models in their effective field of fire, so they just move up a little bit and blow them away.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get in there. But if it's a melee force and the Satixis Raiders are like, I think I can charge that front line, and a couple of them get there, a couple of them don't, but now the whole unit
is much farther up the table.
Right. And that's something that Jim does that to me every time. Like, every time I play against that guy, it's like, God, that looks close. And that's good for me if I get there. But you never get there.
Yeah, you do that to me a lot. You do that to me an awful lot.
Yeah, here's a tip. Here's a pro tip for you. If the tournament organizer has been nice enough to mark the scenario zones for you, and you're playing against somebody from Madison, just assume you're out of range. Because you probably are. Because they will use that scenario zone marker, you know, like if you have like an 8-inch circle in the middle of the board or a 12-inch circle, to vector out exactly to be like a half an inch out of your threat range. Mm-hmm. And all those a-holes are really good at that. It's very frustrating. You're just like, oh, God.
But getting back to sort of the topic at hand, if you're going to put, and I think this is where you were going, if you're going to put something in threat range, either put enough in threat range that they're forced to commit something important
mm-hmm.
that you can take back, or if you feel that there's just, they're going to get whatever you put in there, and you're not going to be able to retaliate until next turn because they have no incentive to commit, then you have to put as much as you can.
Yes, you for your entire...
You have to overload them.
It's something that trolls actually have to do an awful lot from the way that I've experienced the game.
Yeah, they got to go all in and then weather.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's usually like there's like one or two turns of jockeying, and then it's like they usually like have... If they have some kind of threat that like you just have no answer to, which happens pretty frequently... then, yeah, you have no choice. You're just like, all right, we have to go all the way. You know, everything just runs. Like, is put as much stuff in front of it. You know, exactly this exact principle. And then the flip around, you know, becomes they have to be able to identify, like, of the models that you put in, like, which ones are the actual threatening ones and which ones are the ones that, you know, you can basically ignore. So.
And so the good melee lists are the ones where none of them can be ignored.
Exactly.
And that would be prime examples, Epic Vlad. Prime Scar, Prime Denegra, Phineas Shea. Like, when Jim plays that guy, he does not care about a single one of his pieces. But you have to care about all of them.
I care about the Commodore Cannon.
Right, he cares about the Commodore Cannon. But you can't get the Commodore Cannon.
I'm going to get that thing.
No, you're not.
Yeah. I
am. My big thing against a big hate ranged list is try to get my defense as high as possible and hope that their dice suck. And using things like the Zealots just to make that one turn where I might get lucky and get close enough to start getting deviations on them. Because any kind of deviation normally kills ranged troopers. And if I can get those guys close to a jack, they'll start dinging them up pretty quick with the PAL 14. So
Menoth doesn't do the threat saturation thing as much. They have a couple lists where they can play it that way.
Epic, or Krios too. That's all he does.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm going to get there and own you.
But he's not as—he's not nearly as good at it as the best of the threat saturators.
I agree with that because Menoth's slow.
Yeah,
they're not really designed as a faction to
slow. No reach. It's not great.
Yeah,
not much reach anyway.
Yep.
Of course, having speed ups is the sort of the key. There's several key ingredients for a melee army. Would be, can you speed your guys up? Can you protect them? Or can you make them hit so hard that protecting them or speeding them up doesn't matter? And if you get two of those, you have an amazing caster. If you get one of those, you have an acceptable one. And if you don't hit any of them, it's probably a caster you should not be building a melee-centric force around. So So for an example of a threat saturation caster that I've been playing a lot of, Constance Blaze. She speeds them up. She's got Crusader's Call. She can make, in some cases, she can make them hit so hard that it doesn't matter versus transfer with transference. Even on the walk, she's dangerous. And she also can protect them with her feet. So she's got a little bit of everything. She's excellent melee caster.
She is. She really is. And I guess that gets back to list design. I feel like, and I heard this comment when we were at TempleCon from some of the British players that were over here. In the U.S., we tend to skew our lists where they tend to play balanced lists. They play a couple jacks, some ranged elements, some melee elements, and they sort of play a game. Where in our meta, a lot of times it's like, holy crap, that's a lot of guns. Or, holy crap, that's a horde of crap coming my way. Like, there's not a lot of balance, I feel like, in the really good competitive lists.
And in some ways, we're trying to get them at the list construction phase.
Yeah.
We're trying to be like, you don't have, like, I can take this against you, and there's not much you can do about it.
Yep.
Versus playing a balanced list, sort of counting on skill all the time.
Yeah. So, like, the thing where you can kind of break that is when you start doing combined arm stuff, where you sort of morph into what you need. So instead of a balanced list, I like a list that morphs, like a list that is really pretty solid at range that might get outshot. And so if you become the guy that has to get across the table, you can.
The gimp.
Yeah. The gimp that has to go across the table and start beating people with a club. You can, which is why I like Menoff a lot. Is a lot of our stuff is probably not the best. Like, errants are not the best range troopers, but they're still weapon masters, you know. So they're just.
I feel
fine.
Like more often than not, combined arms doesn't turn into going to get them. It turns into them coming to you and you being able to deal with it.
That's because I skew my lists. When I was putting the Avatar in my list, sometimes I was outgunned, but that just doesn't happen anymore. Because it just doesn't. I put way too many guns on my list now.
Mm-hmm. That's more something that I see in your play, actually, Chad, is you'll be like, well, I've got this bomber. Sometimes I have this bomber and these Nis Hunters, but I'm still not quite winning the ranged fight. We'll just get in there.
Yeah. Like I said, it happens a lot. It might just be my play style.
It could also be that trolls are terrible. I listened to this podcast the other day.
Oh, God, Dewey.
And they're pretty horrible.
God, what was that comment? Oh, thanks for the tips, guys. I guess I'll just sell my $700 paperweight or whatever.
Melt down my $700 troll collection.
Ouch.
Yeah.
First response, ouch.
Anyway, going back to the initial topic, my cousin is a gimp, and he is very dangerous with a club, and that is not to be, you know, not respected.
Where was I?
Oh,
so,
man.
Identifying, like, talking about some of the casters in the game that do threat saturation the best. I mean, we mentioned some of them, but you really need to, I can't stress enough that you need to watch out for the Epic Vlad, because it's just, there's so many models that just become huge problems.
Why do Kotor players not play that guy?
But against, and I mean,
we're serious.
Sort of floating off topic here, but when you play against Epic Vlad, what gets me ahead in that game or allows me to fight back more often is that you've got to bite the bullet and give him something. He's like, look at this. I put most of this unit in front of those Doom Reavers. I sure hope you don't feet and come and kill them all. And you're like, God, it's going to suck to lose these, but it's better than having to dance around this feet all game long. So yeah. I feel like if you can force him to get it out of the way early.
That's the way I always see him played. And I've thought about switching over to Kador a couple of times. I think that faction would be pretty fun to play. And that's the way I almost always see that feet dropped. Is
too early.
It's dropped to initiate. It's dropped because the speed increase off of the feet like gets you with certain units gets you an amazing alpha strike.
Cappy uses the Ulans, mm-hmm. and they go so far. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they charge 16 inches with that feet.
The Doom Reavers, I see that a lot too.
Yeah, yep, they charge 14, I think.
14, yeah.
But it's really good for jamming when you have one of those scenarios, especially Menoth is so slow, so when I'm moving up and I'm kind of trying to jockey for position, boom, those guys are in your face. And then what are you going to do?
I'm not saying never do it. It's just what I always see. And sometimes I feel like you could do that strategy where you smash your entire army into them, and then they literally—it's like the Mark One Biothrall problem.
I've had
they have to kill everything because if anything is left alive, like it's so easy to get. I mean, you have like 20 potential arcs to get to their caster or to get to, you know, and anything can do it.
I've had two very good Kador players play Evlad against me, and both shield wall their IFP, and they have no idea. Like, in my mind, I'm just thinking, oh, thank God that all of those IFP did not run forward.
Like, if they played them like Fenblades or something like that?
Exactly.
Just cloud out and become terrifying.
Yeah. Just like, now I have a million threat vectors because you still have your feet, you still have Hand of Fate, you still have Transference. Like, every one of those IFP is suddenly just a total...
insane.
Yeah, a total mother. And then there's a million threat vectors, and they have reach and a really long range. And I'm just like... shield wall, sweet. That's great. And I think it's because when they're shield wall, like they're both playing Black Dragons. So with Iron Zeal and shield wall, like they're really tough to get rid of. Like they're pretty tough.
Armor 22.
Yeah.
Defense 13.
Yeah, so they're really solid, and they are definitely a good tar pit. But you, I guess that's a good point. I hadn't thought about this, but you're not. Tar pits are for other armies. Like I don't feel like tar pits are for a threat saturation. Melee force.
Your tar pit has to be able to do work, and it has to not slow you down.
Right.
So a lot of Crix lists will tar pit, quote-unquote, with Satixis Raiders alphaing the crap out of you.
Right.
And then they follow up with everything else.
Like Banes or whatever.
Gummed up on the Satixis Raiders.
Mechanical
and
that's
fine. And the same thing troll lists can do. They can shoot Fenblades at you, and you have to deal with those Fenblades.
Or Creel Warriors.
Who have, like, the fall-down crap on the... or the fall-down song on them. And then there's burrowers, and that's one thing that I'd pro tip Trollblood players. Burrowers do not need to be your first wave. I think there's a whole terrifying realm of experience to be opened up on saving those guys to come in behind Fenblades or whatever else. But it's just, especially because if you can force them to compact, that's so good for melee forces.
Yeah, it really
is. If you have an alphaing tar pit, I guess, that's both difficult to deal with and goes a long ways and can still do something when they go in, that's how you really get up on the melee game. And Fenblades and Satixis Raiders are like the all-stars.
Yeah, so you just have to determine when you play them as a tar pit and when you play them as, you know, something else. And I feel like when you want to play them as a tar pit is when you out-threat your other melee opponent. So you tar pit them up or make them really defensive and put them, you know, or I guess actually when you're out-threaded.
Right, it's when you're out-threaded.
When you're out-threaded, excuse me. Yeah, you just, then you toughen them up and you're like, okay, come give me your best swing and then it'll be my turn to swing back. So that's when you'd want to shield wall those with Iron Zeal and get them in somebody's face.
One of the things I like about the Blaze list too is those steelheads both do a good job of out-threading most things at 13 inches. But also if I am out-threaded, turns out I don't care about steelheads, and I'm def 15 against charges.
Yeah, they're cheap.
Of them.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite tar pit is the TFG with a holy ward on them, so you can't hit them with spells. Puts them up to a defense 15.
17 against charges.
17 against charges, and if you throw the Piper in there once in a while, I'll just throw that extra defense on them to make them a 16, 18.
And force a terror check.
And force a terror check.
They already have terror
with the UA.
Well, plus, yeah, sometimes you don't take the UA, though.
Okay.
So
I like the UA just because I can nickel and dime people and put fire on them, and I can just hear people be like, fire is overpowered. You're the only guy in the world that I don't see roll ones and twos every time I put it on them. So.
The other thing that makes TFG especially amazing, like those are all great points, but I think the thing that really ties it all together is that unlike Fenblades or Satixis Raiders, there are 6 points for 10 of them. Like,
right.
Cheap. Cheapness is a very... good indicator of good tar pits.
Yeah, what's the most important stat in the game? Point cost.
Right.
People will be like, what do you think is the most important stat? Point cost.
That's why clearly. I think like Creel Warriors are a great tar pit too for Trollbloods.
Absolutely.
Like they don't smash in as far, but
they're a much better tar pit if you're going to get hit.
Yes, right.
Yeah, actually they're pretty fantastic. There's, you know what really annoys me is when I force a tough check and they make it and then they don't fall over. Like, God, especially if they have, like...
Iron Flesh.
Yeah, or even if they just pipe the stupid concealment from the old... the old
storyteller,
the storyteller. Yeah, the old tard. I'm just like, ah, oh, really? So now they're, because Def 14 is the thing, you know. You're just like, ah,
yeah,
a hit, and then you got to get through the krill stone and armor, and they're one more armor than Fenblades, right? So
mm-hmm. 17 under the stone.
Yeah, so you're just like, oh my gosh, it's terrible.
One thing I did learn from Chad, and it's another pro tip for the troll players, is you want to keep that stone really far forward because you don't want your guys to get out of range. So you want to bring that up just as far as you can, and especially if they have like AOEs or anything like that. I heard that on this podcast the other day.
Even yeah, apparently all of us Menoth players are the same.
I think Dewey's giving anti advice.
People have come to expect that on this podcast. All right. I'm pretty sure. So I guess we've sort of digressed a little bit, but I feel like a big part of threat saturation. I might have said this already. I can't remember. Is you if you're going to play that style of game, and Crick's sort of the reason why I feel like Crick's players start out doing well, like they have a leg up on everyone, is they sort of force you into a threat saturation game, mm-hmm. and it sort of builds your list for that game for you.
Yeah, and it's especially it becomes easier when you don't have any guns in your list because you're like, I just have to get there, and you start with that pure mindset.
Yeah,
and it becomes I see players that get to play combined arms armies screw this up all the time. Like, for example, Carver, Lord Carver. His list has the potential to just run screaming at you and beat you to death.
Yep.
He has that option. And you have to recognize when that's the right option and not try to shoot those guns. Because all those little, whatever they're called, brigands,
big
have
irons.
Guns. Yeah. And they have decent guns.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
But sometimes it's better not to use them.
Yep. Agreed.
And it's difficult to identify. It's sometimes difficult to identify when that's not the case. So when you have the option, it's easier to do it wrong. As a Crix player starting out, you're like, guns, none at all.
Yeah, like
run, I guess.
Yeah. The first game they play, they kind of walk their stuff up and they sort of advance and they get shut off the table. They're like, well, crap. And the next time they play, they just run everything forward in this huge cloud and it turns out that's right. So that's kind of why I feel like...
Yeah, once a Crix player learns not to clump up...
Yep.
And... not get their caster killed.
Yep.
Like, run screaming at them is pretty much the correct choice.
Yep.
Always.
And then you just count on your opponents, and if you're playing against newer opponents, they're going to make mistakes of, okay, which parts of this do I need to deal with? And that's why Crix does well in the tournament scene and in general, because it's sort of idiot-proof. Now, I'm not saying that...
You can take it up to even advanced tactics with this kind of stuff, too. Like, yeah. You know, for instance, positioning... Like, we're talking about Crix specifically, like, for instance, positioning Tartarus in such a way that if you can sort of predict where they're going to be sending their, you know, if you've got this big clump of Mechanothralls up front that you don't care if they die because they're just going to come back, you know, and you can position Tartarus in such a place that, you know, okay, well, if they have to put five guys here to kill five Mechanothralls,
actually,
then I can have Tartarus charge through this.
The actual, and that's a great point, is setting yourself up for your next turn is sort of a very important thing for any threat saturation melee army. Speaking specifically to that example, Arc Nodes are the best.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Because
they force people to...
Nothing inspires terror like one of Denegro's chickens sitting in front of your army. You're like, God, what is that thing?
Send as much as they can to go
and
kill
then,
it.
And then, like, Tartarus is just hanging out, like, 8 inches behind the Arc Node, like, all right, I'm just waiting. Oh, you killed it with a 6 reach troops, eh?
Yeah,
we can make this work. The other thing I've seen.
Well, I've seen a lot of newbie Crix players. Like, they have their big cloud, and then Tartarus runs up, and he's pretty near the front, but you know, he's like got a Bane Thrall and a Bane Knight, like blocking him in, and he can't really actually get anywhere.
That's usually when they kill their Bane Thrall or Bane Knight.
Yeah, but I mean, it'd be even better if he could activate.
Yeah.
Add a bunch to those units, and then it could. Activate and do even more work.
Absolutely. You know? So, I guess, and I don't want to make it sound like Crix is really simple to play. When you get to really competitive levels of play, the good Crix players
I'll say it. It is simple to play. It's not simple to play well.
Yeah, but there's a lot of nuance in positioning for melee. Actually, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say positioning for melee is harder. It's really not. What's harder actually, positioning in general is actually a really, really complicated subject.
It is.
That's really hard to explain to people. Like,
yeah.
It's extremely hard. That's why, like, every single time you see us at conventions, or you probably do this with your friends too, every single time we're, like, at a restaurant or something and we start talking about the game, it's almost always like someone reaches for, like, a cup and, like, a salt shaker and, like, you know.
Some sugar packets.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like, okay, here's a model here, and there's this other guy over here, and when he does this, and, you know, you start moving the salt shakers together like they're toy soldiers, like... As we just do that all the time, because you can't talk about positioning without without some kind of example, or, you know, you have to, like, it's a really visual subject.
And the other, yeah, and with those melee armies, like, sometimes you do have key elements. Sometimes you have a Tartarus. Sometimes you have your big heavy hitting Warjack that needs to get there. And so you have to, while jamming everything in and keeping everything relevant, you also have to protect your key pieces. You have to layer in such a way that they can't get through to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really that's a really hard skill to learn, is how many guys do I need to put in the way? How many is too many? Like, because you really have to know what you're going to lose.
Or have an idea. Which is why watching you play that E. Kane list that you built for the last, the Tulsa qualifier, I was just like, holy crap, this is just a stupid Crix list. Because you're just literally jamming with a ton of stuff with a bunch of key important solos that you're protecting. So you've got Ragman there, but, like, you're just coming screaming across the table and, like, deal with all this. And then while they're, like, dealing with all that, Kane's back there going, hey, I'm still back here, by the way. You know,
yeah.
It's pretty awful.
Kane is a splash of ranged you cannot ignore.
Right.
One big thing about the ranged game, too, is manipulation of the terrain. Getting on a hill to get that extra bonus there, or using any kind of blocking terrain, or just trying to move around so that their shots are, you know, being blocked by their own models. So they got to move and give up that aiming bonus and things like that. Just little tweaks that, like, really good players do to you, and then later on you're like, I'm going to do that to the next guy I play, and you forget. Those types of things.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, doubly important for the melee army. You have to get as much... You have to try to keep your army as intact as possible for when you finally get to hit.
Sometimes walls can be kind of a... Walls that don't disappear conveniently during your maintenance phase can be kind of a...
A mixed blessing.
Yeah, a mixed blessing. Because, like, you know, people will, like, throw their melee unit behind this wall, like, now they're going to live. And then they live, and you're like, oh, I can't actually do anything, though, because I'm behind a wall.
Yeah, it's important for melee armies to have Pathfinder.
Yeah, it is.
They have to have it.
Or some way of getting it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, that's why you'll see when people start teching out their lists, you start to see things like Rupert and Saxon Orc start showing up and stuff. Because you have to be able to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Scarlocks, I guess, those walk.
Right. Well, that's, again,
Felcallers.
Back to the Crix example of the threat saturation army. I mean, that's really what it's built to do and what it does really well. They have a lot of built-in tools just automatically for that.
Yeah, Ghostly is an incredible tool because you can both be almost completely safe and be perfectly dangerous.
Yeah, and you can also charge. Like, part of the balancing factor for melee is free strikes. So being able to charge past models to dig deeper, like the front line charges past the guys in the front. They're just like, hey, what's up? As they go by, they go by the fen blade. The fen blade's like, really would like to hit you, but I just can't. This is really annoying.
Yeah. So Texas Raiders are ungodly monsters when they get ghost walked. They dig so far in.
Oh, yeah. Turns out 14-inch thread is the thing.
Yeah. Multiple attacks.
How they ever got desperate pace, I will never know. I have, like...
It baffles me, too.
Yeah. God, don't get me started.
Do you guys not load your army with magic weapons?
It doesn't matter. Ghostly ignores that.
Oh.
I'm not talking Incorporeal. Incorporeal's a different animal altogether. But see, Crix has got Ghostwalk, Ghostly, Incorporeal. Like, they have a lot of ways to mitigate terrain and or free strikes. So that's part of what makes them successful. And they sort of, in the same way that Legion does shooting with Eyeless Sight, Crix does melee and threat saturation with, you know... All the stuff. Stealth on the Banes, tough. You know, it's just like
recurring mechanics.
The other thing is, like, a lot of, like, sometimes, especially with Crix, like, because it's that problem again of if anything survives, it's deadly. You know?
Yeah.
If two Bane Thralls survive, they can kill a heavy. And it's sad but true.
You know what's really sad is when they expect it to kill a heavy.
Yeah, and then they're sad that it doesn't.
Yeah, I was talking to a Duro once, and he charged two stupid Bane Knights into a Scythian. And there was no debuff or anything. And I don't know.
After the second Bane Knight, he goes, how many boxes does that thing still have?
Yeah, and I'm like, Dave, this is a heavy war beast. And I know you're a Crix player, and you're just having stuff explode when you charge it with two stupid trooper models that cost you jack or crap, you know. But this is a heavy war beast, and I'm sorry. There's no debuffs on it. No, you don't just to get to remove it. That's not how it works. And he's just like, oh.
Still but did like 20 damage to it, though, or something. I know.
That's how it works when you put in the minus 5 armor.
Right.
But, yeah.
Dave Which makes is... me laugh. He's like the anti-Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
That's I don't, anyway. I thought that was funny. I guess you guys didn't.
Was there an explanation coming? Because I'm really confused.
No.
God, Dewey.
Chad got it.
Anyway, God, we might have to cut that out.
Lance, cut that out.
It, just to ensure that it stays in.
Right.
No, but Crix can do that especially well.
You know what the best part about the whole Lance thing is? I'm pretty sure people listening to this podcast are convinced he doesn't exist. Because nothing ever gets out. They're probably like...
So we need to get him a shirt. So
there
when
is
he goes
no
to...
Lance.
They're just trolling us. They don't actually edit. They want us to think they edit, but they don't.
I thought it was like a computer editing system like like Siri, where it's supposed to do something. You're like, Siri, give me this. And Siri's like, I do not understand. And you're like, why don't you work?
There needs to be. We need to come up with an acronym for L.A.N.
Lightweight, adaptive,
is Siri an acronym?
Learning algorithm. I don't know. Anyway. Anyway. Crix can do that great. Because we're talking again about like if you saturate the threat and then they kill basically everything but like a couple models, that's still good because they're still really, really deadly. Some armies, you have to be careful because you can saturate, and like there's some units that like I won't mind like killing them down to one or two guys because I'll be like, well, those guys are basically, I can basically ignore them now that they're not
dangerous.
Yeah,
or as
like
dangerous.
Like they'll only get dangerous if there's, you know, I'm trying to think of specific examples of this.
Like any sort of tar pit,
yeah, like two boom howlers.
Yeah, you don't care.
Who cares?
Two TFG, whatever.
Right.
They're going to CMA you for a POW 12.
Yeah, or two IFP even. Right. Like.
Yep, although if Epic Vlad is still alive.
Yeah, if it's Epic Vlad specifically, then you're...
You're just like, two IFP.
Then that's the same thing, because
holy hell.
Because they'll do work.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, sometimes you can take a unit down to like, you know... You can kill like you can kill the bulk of them, the important pieces, the ones that can get in your way. You know, that stop you from being able to kill the other more important things. But sometimes it's okay to leave a unit at... One or two.
Oftentimes, it's not that scary with Satixis or Mechanithralls unless there's surgeons still alive.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually sort of an art, too. You force a command check, and then if they fail it, then you just move on to something else and we'll leave that unit for the next turn. You're just like, you're not doing anything next turn anyway.
Mm-hmm. Unless Rupert's around. He can rally them.
He can.
There are some auto rallies in the game.
You know what I'm happy I don't see anymore is like when people would play Kador, I would always see like the Widowmakers, and I'd see it, and I'd just be like, I hate Widowmakers. Do you see how I edited myself?
Yeah.
But I would see them on the table, and I would just hate them. And like everybody else has been like, oh, I'm going to use these Kyazis and all this stuff, and no one uses them anymore. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to hate those things. So
it doesn't seem fair they don't have to roll like to break armor, right?
Here comes a little tip that I got playing against the Kador player that I'd like never seen before. Doesn't come down to the shop very often. Just happened to be there on the 4th of July. When, like, no one else was there, I just went because I was like, maybe somebody will be there to play games. So I sat down against this Kador player, and I was playing a Jeremiah Cray list with the Stormwall and a Centurion and some other stuff. And I move up the Centurion, and I'm like, yeah, this guy's just going to run around and be annoying with full tilt on him all game. And the Widowmakers roll up, and they start taking a beat on the Centurion. I'm like, well, like, I give a crap. And he's like, take a point to your shield. And I was like, wait, what? Take a point to your shield. Take a point to your shield. Take a point to your shield. And I start doing the math, and I'm like, yeah, they take my shield out in two turns.
Whoop!
Like, and I can't get there. So...
Ruh-roh.
You're just like, awkward.
Those things are really good and underutilized. They were also, in that game I played against...
Matthew,
Jeremy Lee's brother from Texas. Those Widowmakers were one of the biggest problem pieces on the table because they just swept in from the side and started tearing apart my long gunners.
They're very good on the flank. So when I see Widowmakers not perform is when they vanguard the army. I see a lot of Kador players put them out front so that literally I have dealer's choice in what I want to do to deal with them. If you put them on the flank, they're much more dangerous.
They're advanced to play. You pick your matchup with them.
I agree, but I've seen...
Widowmakers are fantastic. God, those things used to tilt the heck out of me in Mark 1. But the way that Nate started using them was just because random blast damage or whatever used to just, you know, whatever, would clip them from advanced deploy, or you run a totem hunter up to engage them or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like a... Gudrun used to be great at dealing with them. But the way he started using them against me was he'd hang them back, and then whenever I made a tough check on a big model, you know, he just used them as like, all right, you're not engaged anymore. I can see you over my whole army because you're a medium or large base.
Yep. He's just like, make another tough check.
Yeah,
make
and
another
it's just
tough
make
check.
Another tough check. Yep. Make another tough check. Make another. All right, you're finally dead. Like, it's really good against like champions and long riders and stuff.
That's honestly what I use Redeemers for, is like making somebody take four more tough checks, because I'll kill a bunch of their stuff, and then I'll be like, oh, that's knocked down. All right, anything but tough check. That's knocked down. Anything but tough check. Mm-hmm. And just use it as a take away its one disadvantage, which is its rat one base.
It's just especially good with the Widowmakers because of the auto point.
Yeah.
I was just going to throw this out there. That's one of the
pretty much an auto point.
Big weaknesses of the Troll Bloods. I was listening to this podcast the other day. All right, I've killed that joke. Yep. I'm done.
Yep.
I thought that was going somewhere. So bringing it back in, we have much more to talk about threat saturation.
Not really.
Don't get frustrated with your Crix player if they're threat saturating you into oblivion. You just need to learn how to deal with it, and over time you will. So they're going to, like, I don't know. I hear a lot that, oh, Crix is the best, blah, blah, blah. It's not fair. Or Legion is the best, blah, blah, blah. And they're just the easiest to get proficient with. I feel like Legion's easy to get proficient with because of Jake. Just because he shares so much knowledge. And a lot of people... like, he spends a lot of time answering a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think... and it's such a visual topic. I wish we could do it a little bit more justice. Because the effects of layering and order of activations is hugely important when you've got your whole army smashed in there. And positioning such that you can choose which elements to activate.
Yep.
Like, because the very best is when I run, as an example, running the Satixis out of his advanced guard. And if they smash in and you've got some, like a defensive feat, like Epic Denegro or Prime Denegro, and you go, boom, and you feed on them so that their retaliation is much blunted. You want to position such that your back line can go first and get things that are close to the Satixis, so the Satixis can go way out farther and dig. You want to be able to leapfrog yourself. And getting to that level of positioning is where that separates the learning melee players from the excellent melee players.
Yeah,
well, their ability to bring as much of your army to bear as possible.
Yeah, the other thing I see mistakes made in is charging the wrong targets with their guys. Like, oh, you could dig much deeper if you charge in a different order or a different manner. Or
getting
active,
getting your crisscrosses down with your charges,
and if you're good at positioning, so you don't, dork your charge lanes from the guys behind, like you said, so they can charge up and free up the guys that were engaged. Like, I do that a lot with errants behind zealots. They'll come up and they'll free up my zealots, and then my zealots will go bomb stuff. That's pretty sweet. Not gonna lie, works out really well.
Mm-hmm.
Another big, here's my pro tip. The one pro tip I have is, don't get tunnel vision. Don't say that thing has to die, and then just kind of forget about all the other threats. So what will happen is you'll be looking at that, and maybe you won't be thinking about it. You'll just want to get those models out of the way, so you'll charge off somewhere. So then you're just focused on this one thing, and you start blocking charge lanes to everything else. So just keep the whole game in mind as opposed to just that one piece that you want to get to and crush.
That's a good tip.
Yeah, that's actually true. It's the other problem with melee is it's really easy to screw yourself over. I don't know how many times I've looked down and went, why did I move you there?
Yep. That's another. Now here comes the
Dara Graith.
Here comes a pro tip that all Crix players learn real quick. Bring Dara Graith is option one for if you screwed yourself over. You're like, man, I blocked Tartarus in real good. Ah, well, just part, get out of my way, and like even base to base models can then make a 2-inch hole.
Yep.
And then Tartarus is like, excellent, and he goes and kills some stuff. Alternatively, just don't be afraid to kill your own stuff.
I've been really good with Crix.
I've been like, all right, I guess I'll punch it in the back. It's dead. Like, just take my reach, cast up there, and go, get out of the way, and then teleport away.
That's one instance where tough really, really sucks.
Yes, it does.
Turns out tough's not optional.
That Fenblade's in the way. All right, well, take a shot at him. tough check.
I've never really Jesus flipped a table, but I have played the game where you've got, like, I just need to get this guy out of the zone, and I win. Tough check. Oh, now I auto-hit. I've got four more attacks. Tough check. Tough check. You're going to get hit in the face with my models when I flip this table. I'm just going to warn you. Step back. Tough check.
Yup.
So talking about threat saturation and Crix in particular segues nicely into what we want to talk about next.
I think we should change that. I have a different meta banner.
So maybe it doesn't segue at all.
What do you think about talking about dealing with Mage Hunter Strike Force and protecting your caster? Because I feel like they shape the meta. And it'd be fun to pick on Red for a little bit since we've been picking on Crix.
Really?
You don't feel like Mage Hunter Strike Force? Snipe Feet Go is a thing. Like,
I love that that's the term that everyone... Like, I coined that term.
Yeah.
That's all me.
Good job.
I love that that's a term that everyone uses now. Like, I've seen it on the boards.
Yeah.
Really?
You don't feel like that shapes the meta?
No. Just Ret players are too few and far between.
All right.
I mean, we can.
That's fine.
If it was everywhere, it would. But there's too many. It's just like, I feel like the answer is too easy. Stay way back or take an armor 18, or like a 17 or 18 caster. Find a hill.
Ta-da!
I play Monoth, and I don't have 17 or 18 defense casters. Like, 14 is like, woo!
Armor.
Oh, there you go.
You have Epic Fiora. Because they're going to hit you. That's something that's very difficult to avoid. Hill's the only thing that saves you. Suppose we can do a double meta bend. I mean, there's some things to talk about the Mage Hunter Strike Force.
I've been hanging out on the Menoth forums, lurking, because I'm just like, nah, I don't want to get drug into these conversations. I probably should, but I just like I don't really have time to talk. I don't have enough time to put a detailed enough response into those questions.
Okay, let's talk about it.
But there's a lot of angst, actually, about both of our meta benders that we're going to talk about today on the Menoth forums. Yeah.
So, the Mage Hunter Strike Force are, I would consider them to be an overhyped range unit, but they do have, they have a couple abilities that I think, are tilting in several respects. First is, with their UA, they gain an ability called Phantom Seeker, and they can shoot through anything. They don't need line of sight, they ignore terrain, they ignore concealment, they ignore cover. The only things they don't ignore are stealth and elevation. And I don't want to say design mistake, but wow, that ability is incredibly powerful.
But particularly on Arcane Assassins?
Yeah, they also have the second ability, Arcane Assassin. They ignore spell effects, they ignore animi, they ignore... Actually, they don't ignore animi, do they?
Arcane Assassin ignores... I don't know if it ignores animi.
It does not ignore animi.
It depends. If it's cast by a caster, then obviously...
Then it was a spell.
Then it was a spell.
Right.
But they ignore also... And they also ignore focus camp.
Well, it turns out they're not great against hordes in general.
No.
But they are amazing against War Machine.
Range 12, POW 10, standard crossbows, RAT 6, no CRA.
Thank God. Yeah.
Some hordes casters still have to worry.
Yeah, they can get pincushioned to death, but...
Like, I mean, there's a lot of... low armor.
Armor 14 and Hordes casters.
Armor 14 or 13 even.
Yeah.
There's a lot of armor 13.
Circle's a little more afraid of them than than your standard.
Legion's got a few that are just like, well.
So the Strike Force is really, I mean, their goal, and they also do an extra dice of damage against Warjacks. So they're a little bit War Machine centric since they have the focus ignoring mechanic and they do the extra damage to Warjacks mechanic. And you, what you really want to watch out for is... obviously things that make these guys more accurate to put them in danger, or put your caster in danger really turns them all on, or if they can do more damage.
Which is why, Red players, I don't mean to like hurt your feelings, but you're never getting Deadeye.
Right.
Not happening.
And that's why I hesitate to stop short, just sort of saying like, why did they do this? But I sometimes wonder because I feel like Rhett's kind of in a corner because they've got all these ridiculously powerful pieces that if they got these one or two things go from being to the acceptable level where they are into just like, what the F?
Yeah.
Straight, what the F? Like, you can't give... I mean, you see this in two caster games. People are like, well, I'm going to play P-Kane and Ossian. And you're like, sniped, dead-eyed... three dice or four dice damage ignoring everything shots from 16 plus they're 22 inches away is not okay, it turns out.
Yeah.
Yep. So there's a lot of things they're just not going to get. They're not going to get Deadeye. They're not going to get much in the way of melee hit buffs because the same
Mage
models
assassins
exist in solo form with a 4-inch reach. It's just like sometimes I'm
and
like,
double I'm damage looking, past armor.
Right. I'm just looking at like where can Rhett go from here? Like all their casters are just going to live in the mediocrity land, I guess, because they can't be good.
Which is why Ron buffs magic,
right?
Because it's the only space that's available for them to like really abuse.
But so where the Strike Force really start to bend the meta around themselves is with Raven. She's got the snipe spell all the time, and she's got a feat. Her feat is Deadeye.
Yep.
And Swift Hunter, I guess.
And I feel like Raven players get a lot of free wins.
Sure, sure. Because you've got the...
Especially like, against your Severiuses, your Harbingers.
Yep. You've got 22 inches of 11 shots that ignore focus camp and are likely to hit because they're 3d6.
Yeah, and they ignore cover and concealment. And
cover and concealment, intervening models.
Yeah,
spells.
Everything.
Yeah. Whatever.
So they hit an average of death 17, 16 yeah. and a half.
They'll likely put about 7 shots into a defense 15 or 16 caster.
No, they'll all hit, won't they? On average? Well, probably like 8 no. or 9.
Into a 15?
Into a 15?
They need 9s. So 7 or 8 will hit.
All right, fair enough. So I'm Asian. I'm terrible at math. I'm sorry.
You just got to work some of the math. And then they start at POW 10. So if you're looking at an armor, if you're looking at like a 15-15, which is a fairly vanilla, I mean, those exist.
God, I would dream. I dream about that in Menoth. 15-15? Like, holy crap, this guy's a beast!
Then you get like 7 hits at dice minus 5. So you look at about 14 damage. But that's very easily within the spike you to death range.
Yep.
So there's a lot of casters, like 16 armor becomes a little bit safer. You're only expecting to take 1 or 2 per strike force, but if all 11 get there, you can just die. And taking a ton of damage on your caster from a long ways out is still a bad way to start the game, even if she doesn't get you.
Mm-hmm.
Where you become safe is starting at like base armor 17. So actually what's not a bad stat line going up against Raven is 14-17s, and those exist in pretty much every faction. If you can put a 14-17 caster on a hill, you take, like, 6 or 7 points.
Yep, then they have to adjust their plan.
Right.
So
it's something that you really need to be aware of, but it's one of the more, of the, like, auto wins, it's one of the more defeatable ones.
I feel like side selection, terrain selection is extremely important. So if you win the die roll,
it's... Find the hill.
Yeah. Sometimes it's more important to go first. Sometimes it's more important to get the hill. So you have to kind of identify, like, for example, in Killbox, you want to go first. Because otherwise you run out of board space too fast.
Yeah, she can back you up to the Killbox.
Yeah.
That's a danger.
Yep. And they're AD, right?
Yeah, they're AD and stealth. So they're not easy to remove.
Right. But if it's not Killbox, I feel like you want to have the board side that favors you the most, which is the side with the hill.
Preferably as close to your deployment zone as possible.
Right. Yeah. Like a hill in the very back corner of the board is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Something that your caster can run to first turn.
Yeah. Yep. Or even just start on. That's good, too.
But at the same time, what I worry about playing against Retribution is having my caster forced out of the game. Because if they can successfully force my caster out of the game, Retribution on just like an army versus army basis is ahead almost all the time.
Yep.
Their army is going to be better than yours.
Their troops are. Their jacks suck. Their troops are, for sure.
They play pretty troop heavy.
They have to.
Yeah.
So speaking from a Menoth perspective, because we have a lot of squishy casters, you have to have a way to reach out and touch them. So if you have a Redeemer... and you're pumping shots into the area where they're at, and you just kill 4 or 5. A lot of killing 4 or 5 Mage Hunter Strike Force takes you out of threat of probably dying. I mean, you can still be diced out. But so the early game plan, I feel like, against them is to get rid of as many as you can as quickly as possible, obviously. But once you get rid of four or five, they become a much lower threat.
I'm going to take this opportunity to sort of like a perfect storm of Christmas for me. I get to give you, at the same time, I get to give away tech from Jim, which I love to do, and give you advice for net decking John at the same time. So listen up, Red players. Discordia and the Giant Mittens are your friends. They protect your stuff from this crappy blast damage that he's throwing around all the time. As well, and so they just give you like at least an extra turn that they take to kill to kill Hulk Hands or to kill Discordia. Probably takes two turns to kill. Of you just getting to move up and threaten them further. Those pieces are undervalued, especially the Giant Mittens.
Mm-hmm. The Giant Mittens is way overcosted. I would never put him in a list. I think he's terrible, and I think you should probably not play him.
Now you know just how good it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like my nightmare.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and protecting, especially when you have, if you can identify a list where you're like, the Strike Force must live, you have to have the tools to make that happen. And because people will often bring tools to defeat them, and the most common tool is going to be blast damage because they're fairly high defense but fairly low armor, stealth infantry. What do you think is going to come at them? Blast damage, and you have to be ready to take care of that. And you, in the Retribution faction, you have the tools.
Honestly, if I played Ret, and I did play Ret at one time, and I was playing against Menoth knowing what I know, I would force their caster back early, but Menoth doesn't really care that much about having their caster forced out of the game, and my game plan would be to kill both vassals and all the choir.
Right. That's a feat-worthy situation for Raven.
Absolutely.
100%.
But
and the same thing happens against Signar. She'll see, because you'll be like, here come the gun mages. Like, I've got the answer to these stupid barbos. And then they're just like, eh, feat, kill your gun mages. And you're like, crap.
Uh-oh.
That's happened to me. That happens when I play against Ben with his Ret.
Those things terrify me. 22 inches is huge, and being a Menoth player, you inherently eventually learn that, like, my caster belongs on the back edge of the board, and if I bring him forward, I've done this wrong.
Yep.
So that's just, I hate those things.
Raven is strong against Menoth, because she feats early to remove all the support pieces, as well as probably some of the infantry, and then on follow-up turns, if you can keep those Strike Force alive another turn, not difficult, if you bring some of those blast immunity pieces, then they can sort of like be like, oh, well, I guess we'll just take that Redeemer off the table then. And then now they're safer again. And then by now you sort of get, you move whatever other tar pit unit you've got in the way, and like the Helbs move up to protect the Strike Force again. And then they're like, remove the other Light Jack if there is one, or take half health into it, or like a quarter or a third of a heavy out. And so you can really ride them all game against some factions, but you have to be able to keep them alive, I think, to really make Raven effective. When I see the lists that don't bring any protection for the Strike Force, that's when I'm like, she's dangerous, but not that dangerous. It's when you can, it's when you can't get rid of the threat. That's where metabenders come from, is when there just isn't a way around it.
Yeah.
Like Lilith, you're like, there is no way around this.
It's called purification, Bob.
Lich, there's no way around this. I mean, there's always small example, like corner case situations, but
I just I see a lot of universal complaining about that unit, so I thought we'd talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that unit not scare trolls at all, I suppose?
Not at well. Do I mean, don't like it when people shoot at my Creelstone.
Yeah.
But, so,
only the,
yeah.
Only the sniped Strike Force can do that
right.
Reasonably.
Right.
Otherwise, they're like 4 inches in front of the bubble, so they're hip deep in fen blades at that point.
Why do they have CMA? That's weird.
I don't know.
It's so weird. They're CMA, but not CR.
It's kind of nice that they can clear themselves off. I saw that happen.
Yeah, and it was one of those times where like I was like, I saw this guy like had like a bunch, like he had 7 or 8 of them bunched up, and I was like, this is ideal for an Axer. So like ran up and engaged all of them, and I was like, what are you going to do now? And he was like, CMA you, and I was like
about
what?
Fen damage.
And I was like, what? That's not what? That's not what? Why do they have that? Anyway, yeah. Creelstone, don't like it when that gets shot. Sometimes that can. I don't know if it's worth it. Worth it, though? It doesn't scare the casters. Like, none of our casters really care.
No.
At all.
If the Creelstone buff still counts in, then you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, they just can't hurt you.
I'm going to go on a crusade to get that Creelstone switch to be a spell effect.
Good luck.
Chad's like, I will kill you now.
Good luck. Good luck. I don't know.
Was that a random? Was that? No, that was. I was thinking Bloodsport. I was okay.
I was thinking
USA.
The movie Taken. But anyway,
Star Fox. Anyway, yeah, that's the only thing though. I'm not sure if it's worth it because you're basically spending like what 12 points to kill 5 points. 10 points to kill 5 points. I don't know. It's support though. It's probably worth it. Actually, that's about the only thing though. Like,
yeah, most of the time you're just like whatever. I don't feel like they're super strong against hordes in general. They're okay, but
They're pretty good actually at killing a lot of our single wound infantry too.
Turns out POW 10 is a thing. You'll hear on the Signar forums, all we have is POW 10s. I'm like, yeah, POW 10s kill like every infantry model in the game for the most part. Dead.
I mean, they're base rat 6, which is fine. I just think, I mean, they've been given a status of
Legion?
The all fixers, which they're not. I don't know. A lot of times you run into lists where all they are is rat 6, POW 10s, and you're like,
I guess that's a thing that's worth talking about with those guys if you're playing them. Like, this is, I guess, not to answer the meta-bending potential of them, but, like, I feel like people get too caught up in putting them into the same sort of boat, like, every single game. And so if they're, like, using them to, like, just exclusively shoot jacks off the table and they go up against a hordes list, then they're like, oh, you don't have jacks. This is pretty dumb. And then they still, you know, maybe try and do a couple damage to your heavies or whatever. You know, it's like, instead use them to clear off infantry. Or instead use them to kill support.
Or be a super annoying tar pit.
Yeah, or be a super annoying tar pit.
Is a thing.
And stealth?
I want to say 14.
It's 14.
Okay. I thought they were def 15.
It's still pretty high.
Yeah.
And they're stealth. They're stealthy, so. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's one of those situations where I feel like not a lot of armies will be able to. Just about the only thing that I can think of that. Oh, here's one. The Kriya Animus is a pretty good answer.
Yeah. Yep.
To Mage Hunter?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I see a lot of consternation around that unit, and I've never had a problem that I can think of. I had them kill all my choir once, and that was Jim. I was like, well, this is annoying. And he's like, I know.
I think that was even before that was before he'd gotten the mittens, too, the big ones.
No, he had them. He just didn't have them glued together yet. I was like, ah! This is the best thing ever.
So, yeah, I mean, I think a well-played, protected unit of Strike Force is it's really an ace in the hole against Menoth.
So you shouldn't play with them.
Especially if you can give them magic weapons.
Yeah. Would you stop helping? Why are we net decking me?
So I think for those of you who are listening, in order to net check John, we're at Raven. Full Strike Force, at least one Hulk Hands, probably Discordia. I think you want the Halberdiers, the House Guard Halbs, in there. I don't know. What else do you hate, John?
You can stop now, man.
Ion on hold.
You're net decking him, but I play that faction too, and I suck. You are not helping my cause. One day I would like to go 50-50 at a tournament.
Have we beat this into the ground?
Yeah. If you want to go 50-50, my recommendation is talking all of your opponents into a coin flip.
Oh, I'm going Drunken Master. I've left the technique for a while, but I think I'm coming back to it.
He's going to be uppercutting people when they don't expect it.
Hey, man. You should have guarded your dick. Dick punch, punch slam!
The other caster that you want to watch out for is Ossian, especially as a War Machine player.
Mm.
So just be like, those three heavies are dead. And you're like, crap. Two, one and a half, something. A bunch of heavies, especially if he gets harm or something similarly unpleasant off.
I think Ossian's a hard one for new people to play with, just because his feet, I think they think that they can leave his control area, but you have to get them suckered in
right before
you can actually pop it. So new people don't... There's a little bit of finesse to that particular
thing.
Absolutely.
It's a faction of finesse. But Ossian, you also want to watch. He's different than Raven. He doesn't turn them into... He turns them into solid performers all the time, rather than the sometimes I win.
No, where he's dangerous is when they slam something with their demon. Is it demon? Banshee.
Banshee.
With their Banshee over the top of your caster, and then he feeds. And
sometimes
like,
all he needs to do is get you with his own -2 defense gun.
Yep.
And you're still in trouble. So.
Yep. Mage Hunter Strike Force with Quicken is almost as threatening as Mage Hunter Strike Force with Snipe.
Also true.
Yep. Which is harder to protect.
Yep. So we've beat this horse into the ground.
Yay! That's what we do.
Do you want to do the other one?
Yeah, why not? It's been a while since we've done one.
Okay, we're just going to double up on Metabenders now. This one segued beautifully from Threat Saturation, but apparently we had to jump in with the disjointed one first. Terminus.
I feel like that was an attack on me, Keith.
Well, I was just saying.
No, you weren't.
I was just...
You were needling me. At least own it. Really?
No, I was just saying.
Just randomly?
Yeah. Just the thought that occurred to me.
Yeah, just like the, you know, anyway.
Me and Chad talked about this earlier. Once you said the uncomfortable thing and you know there's no going back, just own it and go forward with it. And you're like, and I have pictures of your sister. Throw it out there.
All in. That's what it's called.
I don't have a sister, Dewey. I have a brother.
Close enough.
So Terminus is one of the most potent threat saturation casters in the game. Because he sort of does he's got a 1-2 punch of protecting his army, which he does through granting them tough all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself hits so hard when he gets there that it doesn't matter how much you lose. And what was the third thing that I said? Oh, he doesn't speed them up. So he's just got the two of them.
Right. He also has his feet.
He plays a slightly different game than most threat saturation casters in that he is a major part of the threat himself. And that is something that is extremely rare among casters, because usually if you put yourself out front, you get killed. Terminus might be the most survivable caster in the game as far as just being able to not care.
Yeah, he is definitely, I would classify him as maybe the only frontline caster. Like, there are very few casters that I would feel comfortable just, like, being an asshole and just, you know, excuse my language, just run around and being an unkillable jerk.
Sackpon is not right.
No, it's not remotely fair. So,
problem, let's start with why you can't kill Terminus. Base armor 18. 14-18 is an excellent starting stat line. He's got 6 focus to camp, and he camps it. He's got sacrificial pawn, which keeps him safe from pretty much anything you can think of.
Keeps him safe from Eris.
Yeah, Eris, well, she can, but in rare, only we'll talk about this on the back end.
Yeah.
Eris can't reliably shoot off that focus because any undead model within 3 inches can take shots for him that are not incorporeal.
And they will take that shot, I promise you. Yeah.
Well, not every time. Sometimes I've heard people talking lately about, like, yeah, to kill the stuff around Terminus, just shoot Terminus. I'm like, if you shoot Terminus with a POW 10, I'm going to let you roll your dice minus 14.
Yeah. Why would you sackpawn that off?
I'm not letting you kill a Stitch Thrall when I can just take no damage. And then he combines some things.
He also has, what, 18 boxes?
20.
Ugh. All right, yeah.
No, it might only be 18.
He's 18 or 20.
A bunch.
Yeah.
A bunch of boxes.
So he's typically armor 24.
Armor 24, and then he'll stack Darragrath on there, so living enemy models will effectively, he'll be armor 26 against them. Yeah, I mean, very, very, very difficult to remove. And then on his feet turn, he gets armor for each soul, or for each living model that's killed. He gets souls, and the souls count immediately for armor, and then they count for armor again the next turn when they turn into focus.
Yeah, it's nothing for him to run around being like armor 30, armor 35, you know.
For a couple turns.
Yeah.
And in those couple turns, he's usually coming to hunt down your caster.
Yep.
Because he himself can kill pretty much whatever he touches.
And he also has wings.
Up, yeah, when he goes up to like mat 9, power 18 or something like that. Yeah, and he's got wings, so he flies. He can charge you over through models or something else. Oh, and he's so high armor that he doesn't care about free strikes most of the time.
Yeah, so his game plan is to kill everything that can kill him.
Yep, and then be himself to victory.
Yeah, and then just camp his way to victory. Like, I've seen plenty of games where, at the end of the game, Terminus is just like, take my one attack, go.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't roll a 12 for damage, or whatever. You know, like,
right.
Yeah, all right.
And he delivers so much of his army there that oftentimes you will just lose the attrition fight to Terminus. Like, he doesn't make his army more accurate. He doesn't make them hit harder.
He actually does. Because he will fly in the middle of something.
Yeah, if he flies in with Malediction.
Yeah.
But
I've seen Eric do that a lot.
Yeah. While Terminus is very difficult to kill. It's not impossible. So you can't always do that. You can often do that. But there are things that Terminus needs to fear. So
ignited avatars. Come over here.
Yeah. Avatar. He does not care for the avatar of Menoth very much. I've seen that thing cut his head off on a number of occasions. But anyway.
I've seen me roll two focus like a boss. Like, really? Now I'm
I'm seeing a lot of Terminus players move away because his big ability is basically in lieu of having a spell list or anything interesting about him, he's got an ability that just gives all friendly faction undead models within 10 inches of him tough. So that's his spell. He makes his army tough. And that creates such a problem for playing against Kryx, because not only are the Mechanithralls, which he takes usually 10 or more of, recurring, but they're tough. Tough Bile Thralls are a huge headache. But I'm seeing more and more Terminus players, and I agree with this, moving away to taking some living troops. But there's not much more irritating than getting alpha'd and then getting Terminus. Like, getting hit by the Satixus Raiders coming in from 14 inches downtown. And then having to bunch up, and then Terminus gets a monster feat out of the counterpunch.
Or the Blood Witches. He makes his whole army tough, and he takes away tough from your whole army, and then he just attritions his way to victory.
Yeah, like a boss.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out
the Blood Witch's mini feat is sometimes just like a stall.
It's like, yeah, free turn.
It's a pro tip for you. Blood Witches, minimum Blood Witches plus Hag should probably be in almost every single Kryx list.
Agreed.
They give you a dispel, and they give you anti-tough, and they give you a speed bump if you want it that's incorporeal for against certain lists. I mean, they just do. And then they also...
Like, and they're also mat 8 2 attacks with when they're ganging up.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's a truly incredible unit that's underused. I don't think it's even wrong. I wouldn't disagree with anyone who played max Witches plus UA in all their lists.
Yep. I agree. I'm just saying minimum plus UA is plenty.
It's a tool that you need to be practiced with as a Kryx player.
It's the sole reason they invented Zoloft.
I liked it, Dewey. Keep them coming. Screw these guys. Just keep them coming for me. It's good.
So, if you've seen Terminus, if you know what he does, a lot of those, and one of the things that Eric does that I thought was kind of innovative was he started to play the Deathjack, because the Deathjack is such a power piece that he usually doesn't get anything with the Deathjack except forcing them to commit something that can kill Terminus. Because it turns out if it's something that can kill Terminus, it's probably what they also need to use to kill the Deathjack. So he's like, here's a Deathjack, and they're like, I guess I'll kill that. And you're like, cool, kill that. One less thing for Terminus to worry about. But it's just like the Terminus game plan, extremely predictable. He's coming at you. He's going to try to maximize his feat, spend two turns terrorizing you with this massive armor count. And so your game plan must be to somehow disrupt his. And before he can get to your caster, or before he can remove all the threats to himself. And every faction can do it.
Can I say that I already regret us doing this metabender?
Why is that?
Because I have a game with $50 on the line with Eric coming up, and I'm going to give away a lot of the tech that I use to beat up on Terminus right now.
He probably doesn't listen to it.
Good point. You don't think anybody in Texas does, though?
Who listens to us?
No one.
Every faction has a tool to deal with Terminus, I would say reliably. If you are practiced in understanding what the Terminus player is going to do, and confident that you can play against it. Tip number one, and this is just a general tip for all Kryx players, Stitch Thralls and Necrosurgeons have to die. You can't let them make three Mechanithralls. If they make three Mechanithralls once, they've paid for themselves.
It's the most tilting thing ever when you bounce a magic bullet into a Necrosurgeon and they just make their tough check. It's
yeah.
So tilting.
It sucks. Honestly, I think working to remove the Stitch Thralls is almost a better plan because it's oftentimes easier.
You still have to fight through tough.
Yep. Well, they're easier to get to, it turns out. But yeah, they're number one target.
Yeah, you have to get to them. Before you start killing Mechanithralls or before you start killing living models.
Bile Thralls are also, that's part of the problem.
Those you need to just at least knock down. Yeah. Because they're not that dangerous when you've knocked them down. Unless your positioning is bad. Say bad. So yeah, really the on a turn-to-turn basis, you have to identify what in his list is going to become a huge problem for you and neutralize it. And you got to knock. So you got to knock off the front line that's going to charge you. You can't really. If you're eating a full charge from Terminus's army, you've probably lost. And it's a little bit tougher to stop when Satixus Raiders are involved, but not all of them play Satixus Raiders. But yeah, killing the Stitch Thralls, I can't stress enough. Stitch Thralls, they've got to go. If they make 3 Mechanithralls, you're in trouble. If they make 6, you might be dead.
So, I always think about my overall game plan when I'm playing against Terminus. And number one rule is I stay, is it 13 inches away from him? So depends a push plus what, charge, he can't get me.
Depends on what's in there. With
I always make sure Corbeau dies.
Yeah.
Corbeau dies right away. So that's like my first priority. Corbeau dies. My second priority is to stay, I keep my caster like, I think it's 13 inches away. 6, 9, 11 with the push 12 is his max threat. Is that right?
15 with Corbeau.
Right. Well, Corbeau's got to go. So then I force him into a situation where if he ever wants to get to my caster, he has to run so he doesn't get to make attacks. And a lot of Terminus players think they're really cute. They run their caster up and engage your caster when they're an unkillable asshole. And they're like, sweet, I got you now. I was like, checkmate. But that's what I keep Gorman in the back for, is just to bait him in, because I'll just be like, well, you can run and engage me, basically. And I never say that or anything. But that's the game I'm playing. I'm playing the, you never get to kill my caster. You also never get to kill my jacks, because my jacks all have guns. I will always keep them out of his threat range, you know, back up, whatever. While I'm taking his army apart, and I will take his army apart pretty quick.
If you're going to play the caster, I think you are, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I always play P-Crass in that matchup. Like, I have...
I've seen you just dismantle good Terminus players. Like, it's not...
Yeah, I don't even break...
It doesn't even look hard.
Yeah, I don't even break a sweat, right? Because I just kill their entire army, and I never let Terminus do anything of any value. Because I create a situation where if he's going to come towards my Jax or my caster, he's going to be in Black Hoil hell for the rest of the game because his army cannot keep up with him because they're all going to be knocked down and behind my line of engagement. Sure, he can come over the top of that to come at the stuff that's important in the game, but as soon as he does that, he's going to be Black Hoiled. And there's not a damn thing he can do about it. And then he's just going to get, you know, Black Hoiled over and over and over again. And people are like, well, can he just walk and engage? Sure, and then my Jack's going to walk over, headbutt him, Gorman's going to back up, Black Oil him again, and I'll just do that until his armor gets such that I can kill him, and then I'll kill him. And the only thing that gets me in that game, when I play that game, is I occasionally get death clocked because of the stupid tough checks. But I have tabled every Terminus player I've played with that P-Krios list, like, pretty much killed their entire army, and eventually won on scenario or killed Terminus or death clocked.
Pro tip. Tough checks are occurring, ship your clock. I don't care how fast they are, just ship the clock back. It's not an insult to your opponent. It's just keeping things clean.
Yep.
It's not worth, like, at the end of the game, you can lose 5 minutes or more from tough checks if you're not careful about it. Just when they're making tough checks, ship the clock.
Yep. And if you're just really smart about it, you can really make it, at least for the style of list that I play, I can make it so Terminus can't get to any of the important stuff. Like, nope.
He never really gets any good chance to feed either.
Yep.
Because you get to basically shoot his army and then feed, and then he gets to sort of shut. You know, he can't really feed. He can't feed that turn unless he wants to go in himself.
Yep.
And in that case, he's probably. He has to spend focus to make focus, so it's really a wash for him. And then you get another turn to shoot his army after they stand up and shuffle around.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can probably just back up at that point. You know?
I mean, you've seen me play it. I use Krios's feet to kill, mm-hmm. like, I mean, on
kill
Krios's,
a lot of stuff.
On his feet, tough checks or not, I kill like 20, 30 models.
Or more, yeah. Barring tough checks, Aaron's killed 20.
They can, yeah.
Yep. Pretty easy on his feet turn.
Yep. And then blast damage and, like, you know, from all the zealot bombs. And then
any army that can buy itself a second round of shooting and can play a competent gun line has a very good chance to out attrition him.
Mm-hmm.
You just also, the tough part is also having a plan to deal with Terminus when he gets into you. For example, a good like Epic Haley list because she just says time, whatever time. What's her feet called?
Temporal
shift.
Sure.
I don't remember.
I would call it
time walk.
Time walk.
She just time walks you, and then you just like take two turns, and most of his army is going to go away. But Haley doesn't always have a great plan for Terminus himself. She's got some, because other things Terminus hate include getting moved, spells. He does not like them at all. Like, Haley's like, turn you around and time bomb you. Terminus is like, crap. Then he moves forward again. She's like, turn you around and time bomb you. Crap. And he's got to be much more careful with his positioning then, because he's got to look out for, after I get moved by whatever spell effects are involved, like if there's a gallows, if there's a TK, am I still protected from Eris if she's involved? And this came up on the forums, and I couldn't understand why this was said, because somebody was like, Terminus is a good matchup against Ron, and I'm thinking, Terminus is dead. Terminus will never live through that.
Yeah, that's...
Like, if he's anywhere near his front line, Ron's like, oh, I'm just going to get you. Because everything I do is spells, which you can't shunt off. Like, after the first unit of Battle Mage's Advance, you're not going to be within 10 inches of your army, much less 3 inches of your army. Eris is going to strip off your focus, and you're going to get killed by whatever. And then, like, if you make 14 tough checks, then I've still got this Mage Hunter assassin who's just going to cut your head off. Like, I don't see Terminus living through a competent Ron player very often.
Be tough.
And also, like, Ron doesn't need defeat to tear apart Terminus's army. Those spells will work just fine against Mechanithralls if Terminus is hanging out way in back. And then he's got...
Turns out Dirty Secrets...
He's got Dirty Secrets Chain Blast just blowing up his army.
Mm-hmm. Like,
God, I love that matchup for Ron. I adore it. Every day of the week I play that game.
I'm not a big fan of Ron, but there's nothing like just watching somebody run up there and be like, all right, what are you going to do? And watching the Ron player, oh, I'm going to pull him out, and no, I'm going to turn him around. you want to shake hands now? No? All right. I've seen Josh do it, and it's just like, oh.
He's always so jolly, too, while he's just taking you apart. Anyway, that's an aside. My other tournament list that I'm playing a lot right now, my Fiora list, I don't hate that matchup with Terminus either. Because I create a situation where I just carpet bomb and light everything on fire because I have two Vanquishers and a Bonded Redeemer. And so even stuff that makes tough checks is making another tough check. And I just saturate the field. And I have Zealots to buy another turn of shooting. So I feel like he's going to suffer coming forward. And then if Terminus comes forward to like kill one of my Jacks, like he's going to get an ignited... and I also have Ion on hold that list too, so he's going to get harmed and an ignited and quired Jack to the face. I'm pretty sure it just kills him. Like,
yeah. The other thing that you can do on a consistent basis to stop Terminus dead in his tracks is it's easy enough to just keep peeling off the top layer of his army. Stop his army from being effective, at least knock it down. Eventually you get crushed in, but if a Terminus player gets impatient, you're still going to be fine, because you just crush off the top layer and then put stuff out in front of him that scares him a little bit. Like, Jacks that hit real hard. So, and then to come in and kill that target, he would have to do it. And if he does it, you put something else that can counterpunch and kill the arm 18 or the arm 20 Terminus.
Mm-hmm.
That was my plan with my P. Haley list, is just by virtue of being P. Haley, his army does not get to do anything ever.
Seems like a pretty good matchup for P. Haley.
No charges. And then I've got Thunderhead, like, walking around out front, like, bring me some stuff to kill. Like, I won one fateful turn. I looked down at the table, I said pulse, measured it, and said, that'll be 14 tough checks, please, and passed the clock.
Yup. God, that's like the dream.
The stuff that dreams are made of.
And then at that point, it's just like, there's a Stormclad wandering around behind Thunderhead, like, I wonder, I'm just going to keep this guy safe. Because it turns out the Mechanithralls can never get there, because if they're within walk range, they're within pulse range.
Yeah, they're knocked down.
And they're at least knocked down, and they're not engaged, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to shoot. So it's like, ta-da!
Yeah, the
Thunderhead
only...
is invincible, bar Terminus.
Bar Terminus, or bar brought back Mechthralls, which is why you have to get rid of...
Right, which is why you get rid of the Surgeons, which turned out Dead-Eyed Gun Mages do just fine. Or Temporal Barrier plus Blitz Gun Mages do just fine. P. Haley is my go-to for solving that guy in Signar.
Yeah, I don't know how she loses.
Turns out...
She loses when the middle flag disappears.
I actually...
Yeah, there you go.
I actually think P. Kane is fine in that matchup, too.
P. Kane is the... Like I said, he hates being moved. Doesn't care for Thunderstruck too much.
Yeah,
but the end result of that P. Haley matchup is eventually he can't let Thunderhead just go nuts forever. And eventually he's going to have to move up and deal with it himself. And once he does, the Stormclad will deal with him.
If he's forced to spend enough focus.
Yeah.
So you just got to make sure you don't feed him and give him that turn where he gets like 7 extra focus. So,
right.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty game. Easy not to feed him with P. Haley when your only souls are the gun mages.
Yeah, they're just like, we're back here. We're just fine. We have a 14-inch range.
And all you have to worry about is that spray, his ranged attack.
Yep.
And I often include something like an Ion Unholt or a Ragman to really just tilt the scales in your favor.
Man, you got to be stopped. You're single-handedly making the Signar faction overpowered. And I hate E. Haley. That's a meta bender.
Like, P. Haley.
I hate them both. They should just both be put in a sock and sent to Guam or something. I don't know. They just need to go.
You used to not fear E. Haley. Remember that?
Yeah, I played a couple guys that were new, and they were playing E. Haley, and, you know, I'd be like, I won. I don't know what's so great about her. And I was talking to Chad, and I was like, E. Haley sucks. I don't. It's overrated. And Chad's like, you don't talk about M'lady. I was like, I don't know what you do with your models, but whatever. So we start the game, and about 15 minutes later, I was like, Haley sucks. I'm not even playing noobs no more. Stormed out.
I really feel like that's particularly strong. And then you go to P. Kane, who's got a feat that's going to reduce Terminus's army by about 33%, and a turn by turn strategy that just makes Terminus particularly unhappy, having to spend a focus to shake and having between 1 and 6 inches of distance to make up. Creates a problem for him, especially when that Thunderstrike will remove Tough from what can be a very significant portion of the army. If you get the full 6 on that, you can count on a significant portion of the army losing Tough.
Yep, getting shot by long gunners.
Getting shot by long gunners or by mails or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Plus
Kane's feet.
Well, and then I feel like Terminus is going to become less of an issue because he turns out. He's not going to come up and just smash a Colossal. I mean, he will, but his expenditure to do so will make him vulnerable to whatever's behind it.
Also, people coming up with plans to kill Colossals will double for plans to kill Terminus.
Yeah, it turns out, yeah, good point.
Like, my Epic Kane list is just like, would you like to move forward into this minus four armor trap that's coming for you? The other thing that's... You'll sometimes be able to catch a Terminus player off guard with, especially once you've gotten up on the attrition game, which I don't believe is difficult to do against Terminus. It's more about identifying what needs to be killed and doing it in the proper order. The only time that you're really going to automatically fall behind on Terminus an attrition is if you've got melee only, and then you're in a hurting way. Like, you should have brought a different list or built a different list. I'm not sure there's an army that can go melee on melee with Terminus and expect to come out well.
Sounds like a challenge.
You think about that while I keep talking.
That's fine.
The other thing that you can sometimes catch him with is once you get up on attrition, Terminus eventually is going to have to move into position, so you just set traps for him. You're like, well, if you come over here, you get this. However, you've now moved into Eris's charge range. And that's something that they don't see coming a lot, is... Eris's swords remove focus just as well as her pistol does, or her crossbow does, and you can't sack on that crap.
She mat 6?
Yep.
Need
8. 2 attacks.
Yep. 7s. 8s.
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 2 attacks at 8s.
So here's a pro tip. You can set up a situation where if he brings Terminus forward, like towards your caster, if you have Anastasia there, you can run Eris 14 inches, then move up Anastasia, and... espionage.
Yep.
And then walk another 7 and melee attack him to take his focus off. That's kind of a pro tip. So,
yeah.
Like, that's the kind of trap that you can lay for him.
That's another great thing. Like, E. Haley can just assassinate him. She's like, turn you around, pull you forward, and time bomb you. And then, like, the Anastasia Eris 1-2 comes up, and now Eris only needs, like, fours to hit or whatever. And she's like, and his focus goes away. And then the Stormclad's like, I can manage.
Yep. So, but basically, what you're doing is, and if you play against a good Terminus player, right, they're going to recognize these traps that you've laid for him and not bring Terminus forward, and that's a win, too. Because his army doesn't do anything. It really doesn't. Just stands there and dies. Makes tough checks. That's my experience anyway. I mean, if they get there, yeah, sure, that's one thing, but they almost...
Yeah, they only ever do anything when they have people feed him.
Yeah.
Living models, you know. Feed him some living models. He's like, sweet, feet, can of thralls. I got 10, you know.
Yep.
So you need to, I mean, to deal with Terminus, your army list build does need to be somewhat specific, which is why he is a metabender. Like, I'm not cheapening him by saying, like, he's easy to beat. He's only easy to beat if you bring all the right tools. If you have enough ranged firepower to peel off the front of his army every turn so that he can't ever get there with the dumb goons. Because if the dumb goons get to do a lot of work, you're in
you're straight
of hurt.
Yeah.
You're in a world of hurt. So you're basically, you have to reduce the army, reduce the game to basically what Terminus himself can do versus everything you brought. And then you've got the upper hand. But the fact that you have to take it that far speaks to his power.
Yeah. So I feel like we gave a lot of good War Machine answers. Probably should come up with some Hordes answers.
Bronzeback. With a lot of different casters. Actually, we'll just murder him dead.
How many times have we had Chili say, yeah, I dirtled out with Terminus and I got killed by a Gladiator, or I got killed by a Bronzeback, or I got killed by X Scorn Beast. Insert yeah. Scorn Beast here. We love you, Chili.
If you have Zal... He's afraid for his life. He just has to be afraid for his life.
Yeah, God, I guess. Last standard plus feated Zal equals anything dies, including Terminus.
Right. Like, yeah. Like, Hakkar will come in and be like, I don't care about Beyond Death. Yeah. Here I come. Like, this is going to sting.
Combo Strike!
And then, yeah, like, whatever beast. But the danger with Hordes, and this is why he's become kind of a staple for Krix versus Hordes, is that they've got almost always have living troops involved. Cro-Mac is a good answer for him, I think, because there's some he's got troop sweeping potential. If he brings those little wolf shrimp, they're not alive. All the warp wolves are potentially dangerous to Terminus to a point.
Yeah, it's just a matter of if you can do enough damage fast enough. And I feel like you can get ahead with Circle.
Even if he's camping, if they teleport a Primal Stalker into him,
yeah,
it's about pretty deadly.
Primal Getarix.
That's more deadly, slightly more deadly.
Yep.
Same thing goes, P. Kruger is just fine. Like, if you bring the real infantry sweepers to bear, and then control elements for Terminus, like if you can push him, if you can slow him down, if you can throw him away, you can eventually just get him on a scenario. Like, if you can just remove his army and prevent him and do the same thing where you're like, well, here's this dumb Wold Warden standing in front of you, and no, it can't ever kill you, but in order to kill it, you're going to have to spend a significant amount of resources.
And then there's going to be a Warpwolf Stalker standing next to it, or a Feral or something.
Right. Like, same thing goes...
Man, why can't you armlock him? He's big enough. Your Jack should be able to armlock Terminus. That'd be the best thing ever. Sorry.
Yeah, Scorn just needs to bring the big guns to bear. I mean, they've got Venators, which will tear huge chunks out of Terminus's army every turn. Huge chunks. And they've got Reform, so they get to stay safe while doing it. I don't know. Scorn doesn't really have much in the way of other ranged elements. But, I mean, eventually, I really think Zal is the best answer for him.
Xerxes probably.
Xerxes is, yeah, he makes the world dangerous. Morgul makes things quite dangerous. Epic Makeda, actually, in this case, probably not the best answer. She doesn't make things hit harder.
Nope.
And Karn will bounce right off of him.
Yeah.
The armor 26 version of Terminus.
You actually send Karn after Derek Wraith. That's his job. It's to scalpel Derek Wraith out so the Bronzeback can kill Terminus.
Yeah, actually, that's not... If you can... Yeah, especially on your assassination run for Terminus, if you can get rid of Derek Wraith first as a Hordes player.
You almost have to.
Pretty much. Trolls is a little bit more of a challenge.
Yeah, I feel like Doomshaper can probably pull it out.
Doomshaper can continuously scare Terminus away without providing him much souls. But all of your beasts are in danger from the army, which you now have trouble. You don't really have the ability to stop them from getting to you.
Right.
So that's a game where you sort of are playing.
Genesis Wall is so good against Genesis Mechanophiles.
Genesis Wall is
so
excellent in that situation, for sure. So you have to keep her alive. If you've brought a bomber, a refuged bomber can really make the army's life hell as it moves forward and throws bombs, hopefully drifting to Necrosurgeons. Boosted blast damage takes that care of them quite nicely. I also think there's a lot of potential with Grimm, because he gets the time walk, and if you bring some infantry sweepers like Scattergunners, which are underplayed at this point, it gives you a really nice opportunity to sweep a lot of his infantry. Calandra is another excellent answer for Terminus, just because she will... Not only does she neuter his army completely...
Yeah, it seems like Starcross would be really good against that.
Once you remove the Bile Thralls, like, what does he have that's effective at that point?
Himself, yeah.
Sort of. She even kind of reduces his own effectiveness, too. And
she still has Malediction, so...
Right. But
I think she has a game.
She has a good game.
You just have to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
She had TK.
Oh, Bullet Dodger's pretty good, though.
Yep. Yep. True. One time a Terminus player charged my Calandra and hit with a charge attack, did a bunch that I transferred, missed with his claw, and I Bullet Dodgered away, and then he started casting spells at me. And I was like, sweet.
You're like, you're going to let me kill you next turn?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It took two or three damage from a free strike, too, so I was like, finishers, here comes some salt.
Don't expect that much good fortune.
No, not at all.
Calandra lists will need to be somewhat tailored, because, again, you have to have the answer for Terminus.
And you can't just roll over to Bile Thralls.
Mulg is kind of a necessary, if you're talking about specific Terminus beaters and trolls, I feel like.
Almost with a strength buff, too. You
know, yeah. You'd
be talking like Mulg plus Pyre or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What about the Mountain
Certainly
King?
Plus Creelstone, at least.
The King.
What about it? It can't get there. There's a swarm of...
Well, I'm thinking about him coming into it. Like, I guess you have 19 points of stuff that doesn't do anything, but... Yeah.
Him coming into it sounds terrible, too. He'll just kill it.
Does he? 49 boxes is a lot.
48.
Is it 48?
Yeah, and then he debuffs its armor.
So it's
armor 19 or 21 if you double buff it.
But if you're talking about the full-on Mountain King support list, you've got not nearly enough to handle the army. You do not have the ability to handle the army at that point.
Mm-hmm.
No, I like Calandra and Grimm the best for answering Terminus, because they handle his army the best.
Yeah, Grimm's feat's really good. Really helps. But it's really hard to get your feet off without putting yourself in Terminus' threat range. So I think trolls actually have the longest road to hoe, just in thinking about it, besides minions, because they're not a faction.
Trolls have a tough time against Kricks. What is the world coming to?
I know, right?
I have seen a full-blown therapy session after a Trollblood player played like a Kricks guy. It was insane.
Yeah, you mean like every trip back from every tournament we ever went to?
Maybe.
I was going to say, I was just going to say something else too. I forget. Oh, I feel like, and this is my biggest complaint about P. Madrak, like, he would have such a game against that if we had something that could ignore tough. Like, if we had something with all the time Grievous Wounds or Takedown.
If you had a Blood Hag?
That wasn't Grim. Yeah, or if we had a Blood Hag or.
Speaking of Blood Hags, wow, what a tool against Terminus for the Kricks for the mirror match.
Yeah.
I came this close, and my fingers are not very far apart right now for you listeners. This close to living my dream. One time, I was playing against Terminus with P-Scar, and I'd taken Slaughterborn out of the list.
Oh, man.
But that's just like Blood Hag runs. Scar casts Dark Guidance.
Slaughterborn kills Gerlach everything.
Kills 38 models.
Oh my god.
Do you remember Mario Brothers back in the day when you get the hammer? That's my visual.
When I played with Dave, we played P. Krios, and he was playing Denegra, but the whole time he's like, now when I tell you, you knock him down, and I'm going to take Gerlach in there. And like... We weren't even trying to win. Dave was just like, this has got to happen before we go home.
Dave's all about living dreams. He's not about winning games. All about living dreams.
Yeah, that's just a dream come true. Because they don't spread their guys out around him.
Right. They can't. There's too many. Anyone we didn't cover?
Talked about Scorn. We talked about Circle. We talked about... Kaylor.
Minions can't win. If you beat Terminus with minions, I don't know what to... Someone needs to be chastised at that point, I feel.
It's pretty... Actually, Carver's
kind of got a game because he's got all those guns.
He's got all those guns, and he also has the fact that, like, oh, hey, Terminus, you want to come this way? I'll put any of these things on you. And it turns out with my feet, like...
Yeah, a bunch of slaughterhouses with finisher are, like, once you get a point on Terminus, he's like, oh, crap. Those five dice guys charging in are a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, actually,
Carver might be okay.
Carver might have a better game than Trolls against... Oh, sorry.
Maybe.
No, he doesn't, because he has a big problem removing Necrosurgeons. Because those little...
Gunboars!
Brigands can't really...
They can CRA, but then they're going to get charged.
Well, they can... Yeah.
It's okay, they're tough with Carver.
They are.
Well, they're,
you could have a tough off.
They get CRA with Carver.
Oh.
They can be tough because they can sing tough.
Right.
They can also sing pseudo bushwhack.
Anyway, do we miss a Horde's faction? Oh, Legion.
We didn't talk about Kaydor at all.
Well, we have to do Legion and Kaydor both, right?
Okay. Legion.
Anybody that can make stuff hit hard enough. Actually, it's kind of a problem for Legion.
Is Saren?
Nah, doesn't buff. I was thinking
two Scythians? Or two Angels? Or
he weathers it too well. He just doesn't have to get hit by the Angels.
Angels go down, bring him down to 9, and then he gets plus 8 up to...
17?
Yep, so dice minus 3.
Yeah, he's definitely got to respect the Angels. They can dice and kill him. But, you know, Daregraith...
Two turns of two times of dice minus 3 twice.
I feel like if you get two charges with Angels on him, the Angels die.
Not on insurance feet.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think you can put the Angels in a position to charge. I don't think they'll let him get charged without the feet being spent first.
Yeah, the whole army will be in front of him, and it'll be hard for them to chew through it. I don't hate Saren, I guess.
Saren's got some tools in Blightbringer. She can make her beasts more or less immune to the army.
Yes, that's true.
So she can play that game then.
Yeah, actually kind of like it.
Because she can send the Scythian or something out front, and you just can't deal with it unless Terminus comes in. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And then, I don't know, it seems like there's some theory there. Solid theory there.
Yeah. Definitely seems playable. Plus, the Scythian has the added benefit of just killing everything around it.
Yeah.
Well, tough for you.
The general problem with Legion is hitting hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, to have the plan for, like, they have plenty of lists that I can just be like, yeah, I can kill the whole army, no problem. Getting Terminus is kind of an issue, though. Who's their hardest hitter?
Thagrosh.
Peeveil.
Oh, Peeveil. It ties with the Draconic Strength or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Pthags stacks armor. Which is not
Absalonia can give plus 2 strength as well.
Yeah.
I think Vale is the best plan for him because she can do both. Kill his army and threaten him when he comes in.
Yeah. She also has extreme threat ranges, so if she clears a spot to land.
Does she really want to be within 9 inches of him for Insight to go off, though?
No.
Like, you better kill him.
She goes back to 15. Once, if she needs to.
After her feet, you're saying?
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yep.
But and most of the time, she doesn't need insight. It's just that's going to be a continuous something that the Terminus player has to take into account for the whole game.
I guess Bethane has that game, too, where you have Eruption of Spines for the army along with Belphegor's Animus. So you can really take their army out of the game.
What's his Animus?
It's a cloud.
It's
It's not a cloud, actually, though. It's just
Necrovent.
Like, yeah.
That's Necrovent. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a 5-inch AoE.
Yeah. It's Necrovent.
Yeah.
That is Necrovent.
Yeah. It doesn't block line of sight, but it does damage. And so, yeah, she can put that down in very similar to Saren. Block charges.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So she's got a game. And then Eruption will wear on you know.
The other nice thing about playing against Terminus is that you're very rarely, you know whether or not your caster is threatened at any given time.
And yeah, and then you just run.
And it's, and so I'm, the point I was making is that your caster usually has a great deal of freedom. Like, you can just unleash, like, whatever your caster can do, they get to do. You get to go all out to see if you get to stop Terminus. Like, so Vale 2 might even have a pretty decent game, because she can just be like, throw these two Oblitz out into his army every turn. Just be like, eat it.
Yep.
And Freezing Grip's kind of not so much fun for whatever. Oh, actually, Legion just has a lot of solid games.
Yeah, I feel like there's games to be played. I don't feel like he blows you off the table.
And then Kador has got... They're looking for assassination vectors a lot of the times, and he's not that thrilled about seeing the Winter Guard Death Star.
Right. So Winter Guard Death Star goes in any list, and they make a pretty good answer to his army.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just need something that hits hard in Kador to deal with him.
Huh.
Yeah. Seems doable.
Seems, yeah.
Epic Sorsha is brilliant against him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I was thinking,
Iron Flesh on the Winter Guard Death Star, so that he can't really get souls off of them. Plus
I was actually thinking Desperate Pace too.
Shatterstorm is also probably. I mean, that would cancel out Iron Flesh, but that's a thing. That
turns out P Busher straight would be just like, oh, you want to see who's tougher?
Well, what? I think Terminus. No, P Butcher's tougher. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Epic Sorsha also has. I mean, Shatterstorm allows you to not give two craps about the stupid necrosurgeons.
True.
Like, RFP those guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
get out.
You could upkeep Shatterstorm, shoot into the army, and then pop Iron Flesh onto them defensively.
Freezing Grip on some Bile Thralls would be glorious, too.
Yep.
If you can get them.
Frozen Grasp.
Whatever.
No, Freezing Grip.
It's freezing Grip.
Yeah.
Icy Grasp is the other one.
Yeah, Icy Grasp is the not good one.
Right.
Freezing Grip is the redonkulous one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good on Bile Thralls, actually.
And she also has Cyclone, so she can play the keep-away game from Terminus really well.
Yeah, she can.
Yeah. So I feel like you put Gorman in the list.
And if he gets too close, you're just like, I don't care how much you're camping feet.
Winterguard, Death Star, Great Bears.
I don't know about Great Bears.
Bears, actually, if you're playing a Battle Lust caster, so not with Sorsha.
Yeah.
But with a Battle Lust
caster. I mean, they're fine. They're a fine unit, and I don't feel like they have to be there, but I don't feel like they...
Widowmakers are good for, if they're playing the Conga line Bile Thralls, just being like, yeah, the ones that are relevant don't get to bother me this particular turn.
Don't be promoting those Widowmakers.
She's got Desperate Pace, too, right?
Pace for the
Winter Guard.
Yeah.
So they dig. And then some stuff to threaten Terminus, like a Beast 09.
Or, yeah, multiple things
or
to threaten
Terminus.
A quad iron in case there's some guy making a tough check like over and over again that you really, really, really want to kill.
Or like a conquest.
A conquest?
Conquest.
In the list? Yeah, I don't hate it.
With Sorsha?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like a good bond. Oh, everything that ended their activation within 2 inches of this ginormous a-hole is now stationary.
Yep.
Yeah, Terminus can't really risk that. So you're like, coming into conquest? He's like, no. She's like, all right.
Her feet with POW 22s.
Coming into Conquest?
Well, I'm pretty sure if I play Conquest, I'm automatically putting the Ragman in.
Oh, yeah, he's auto-include.
Yeah. So, like,
and
POW
24s? He's got four POW 6 AoEs that he gets to throw out there, too.
Which turns out Terminus' list actually cares about. I actually was theory machining.
Fit? That's a really good list against him, actually.
Yeah.
Me gusta. Mercenaries. Damiano is fond of that game. He plays a really good gun line. And you can sort of play, like, I've got a list that's got Corbeau and Alexia and Eris in it. So it just sort of hangs back as Terminus comes forward. And then all of a sudden it's like, Eris moves 3 inches. And he's like, crap, charge. And then Alexia gets him or something fun like that.
Mm-hmm. Or Anastasia moves. Oh, wait, you don't have Anastasia, though.
Depends. Variations of the list. And then Damiano's feet just tends to scare Terminus a little bit.
Yep.
His various things, like Rosinante or Nomads, become very dangerous.
I still like P-Butcher, too, because then
to kill back.
You put anything onto Terminus. And you're just like, sweet, I get to kill you. Like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't want anything to do with Behemoth. He's just like, oh. Fudge cakes.
Especially P. Butcher Behemoth, like, just like, lightly taps him and he explodes.
Yep.
Crix has a wonderful matchup against Terminus. I don't think we really need to talk about that too much. Playing Crix versus Terminus is Christmas.
It's like Bloodhag plus, like,
whatever.
More threat range.
He doesn't
plus
ever
debuffs.
Get any souls.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He gets a lot of souls off the Crix lists that I play, but
right.
I just don't care.
Right.
Like, Denigra putting Crippling Grasp on him is hilarious. Prime Scar shouldn't ever lose that game if she's got a Bloodhag or if she doesn't. She's like, you want to? She's like, I don't need defeat ever.
Unless, until I can kill
unless
you.
Unless you commit. And if I charge you and I get defeat, you're dead. Like, Scar hits harder than him.
Crippling Grasp on anything is never funny.
Yes, it is.
It's funny. It's funny when it's not you.
Well, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
He's very manageable, but it's a lot of list construction. So if you come up against the Terminus player and you're not prepared...
Yeah, so that's just one of those things that you have to have a plan with at least one of your lists. I like to have plans with both my lists in case you get locked out for things like Terminus, for things like Elitch, you know, for things like Elilith, you know. They're just things that you have to have thought about in your list construction when you're building your two lists for Steamroller or your three lists. How do I deal with it? So put some thought into it ahead of time. And
sometimes you just have to, I mean, with any meta bender, you have to be conscious of the meta you're playing in. Are you going to see this thing? It's not worth your while to freak out about Terminus if you look at the sign-up sheet and you're like, well, there's one Crix player signed up.
Yeah, but it's Eric.
Then you need to worry. Like, it's just, it's a question of, I mean, it's not, you're not breaking the rules. Then look at who's coming to a tournament.
That's true. We should say, too, Eric is one of the Road to War guys, and he rocks Terminus like a boss. And that guy abuses more people with Terminus than, it's pretty sweet.
So that about covers it.
Horse is dead, Jim.
Muse on mail. No Crump to sing the song, so you just have to entertain yourselves.
Speaking of entertain yourselves, you've had your hands in your lap for a very long time, Jed. I don't know what's going on over there, but you're freaking me out.
First off, I've got somewhat of an announcement. There was a question of, there was a computer attack that occurred on, was it the entire country?
Sure. Makes it funnier.
Yeah, nobody cares, but go ahead.
The entire country of Iran, their computers were forced to play the AC/DC song Thunderstruck, and I am officially claiming responsibility.
What are you asking the Iranians for?
I did that.
Suffer 32.
I'm just going to warn the black helicopters.
Until the guys at the black mask show up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, because lots of Iranians listen to this podcast.
Clearly. We're worldwide.
Have you ever seen Keith?
FBI agents.
We are pretty big in Australia.
Have you ever seen Keith spinning in a circle? He's practicing his feet for when the helicopters get there.
My feet?
It was a bad Tignar joke. Pete Kane.
Spinning in a circle.
Hit and miss. Hit and miss, Dewey.
Yeah, I'm not doing
so, that. Moving on. Use on mail.
That was part of the mail. Casey asked that.
So we love Casey. And we love you, Casey. I don't know if you still listen to our podcast, but...
JD has a question for us.
JD writes, hey, guys. Love the podcast. We love you too, JD. Just a quick question on how strict you guys are on takebacks in competitive play. Also, do you go off declaration or execution? I'm just seriously getting into the local tourney scene, and at my last tournaments, I had a bit of a negative experience with them. I don't have a problem with my opponent being super strict, but I'm not too sure how strict I should be as a general rule. Thanks a bunch, JD.
This is an issue that you kind of just have to decide for yourself and move forward with consistency. I know players who play a casual game, no matter what level they play at.
This guy.
And I know players who play an extremely strict game, no matter what level of play they play at. The key is to simply set the expectation before the game.
I feel like a really good rule of thumb is you should treat the other person the way that you wish you would be treated. Like, if you are making if you're moving, you're, you know, if you start moving like a business model before you had a support model, buff it up or something like that, and you go, oh, well, crap. Is it okay if I said that I did this first? You know, if you want to go ahead and if you feel good doing that, then you should allow other people to do that. You know, stuff like that.
Here's my take. But I'm going to rant for a second because I have strong feelings about this. I feel like I want to beat my opponent with tactics of the game, not with errors of bookkeeping. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I get very frustrated when somebody is looking to win the game through cheesing you out on a rules interaction or cheesing you out on, you know, particularly late in tournaments. If somebody's been up all weekend like I often do, I'll make a minor mistake. And if they're looking to beat me because, you know, I did something like I say, oh, I'm going to activate this Reckoner. I'm like, oh, wait, I actually want to activate this Choir. And they say, well, you said you activated the Reckoner. I'm going to get very angry with you, right? Because it's just not.
Also, that's not something that you can actually in the rules call someone on.
Right.
Just I want to throw that out there. Like I've heard that example a lot, too.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen a lot where people go, people, I mean, and I'm going to just go ahead and say those people are douchebags.
Yeah.
If you are playing against someone and they say that they activate something, but they don't actually touch it or move it or anything, and then they immediately go, oh, wait, I want to do this other thing first. And you go, no, you said it. You have to do it now. There's nothing in the rules that says that you have to go off of your verbiage. You know, you don't activate a model until you move it and roll dice with it and, like, actually do things with it. If you haven't touched it, if you haven't moved it, if you haven't done anything with it, except say that you activate it, that's not an actual...
Right.
Thing. So I had to rant about that. Because
yeah, and what I feel, I have a very strong feelings about this too, if you're looking to beat your opponent that way, you are cheating yourself. You will become a better player if your opponent is always, if you give your opponents some leeway so that they can play a better game against you, they're sharpening steel. They're making you stronger because now you're playing a better game. Because when you run into somebody like Jake Van Meter, guess what? He's not going to make that mistake and give you that opening. It's just not going to happen. So you have to be able to beat him on tactics, not on, you know, some silly mistake that he's not going to make.
I don't know. He killed a Creel Warrior with Hero's Tragedy once with Saren.
Okay, so he might make a mistake. But that's a mistake of tactics, right? That's not something you would give him a take back on.
Fair enough.
Right?
Well, I'm not sure he remembered that there was Hero's Tragedy on them.
Right. Well, as long as it's Mark.
I mean, yeah, there was Mark.
And Jake would never be like, well, can I say that I didn't attack that guy? Like, he would never say that.
No.
And that's not a reason.
I know people that would, though. And I've, like, actually, like, I feel like I'm a little too lenient on that kind of stuff.
That's not the kind of stuff that I would, like, if you make a commitment to a course of action and you do it and it doesn't work out well for you, that's not something that I would give back necessarily. But if it's something like you're like, okay, well, I'm going to fire this Redeemer and whatever. And they like roll the hit and they're like, oh, I meant to activate this Choir first. I'm like, yeah, clearly you would have done that. Go ahead. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've even done things so far as like somebody is in the middle of activating something and I ask them a question. So I distract them and then they're like, oh, I meant to feed. Yeah, clearly you would have feeded there. You feed it. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not, I want to beat you on tactics. And I feel comfortable enough and confident enough in my game that I can beat you on my tactics. Otherwise, why am I here?
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
My opinion on the thing is you have to look at it like you're loaning money. If you're going to give takebacks, you can't expect the takebacks to come back. Like, if I loaned you $20, I'm just going to give it to you, and I'm not going to worry about that. So if you're giving them, don't expect the same in return, because in the competitive environment, douchiness does come out. So you could be playing really friendly and be like, yeah, take that back, you know, and you're like, well, I gave you that take back. Can I take this back? And the guy's going to be like, no, I'm about to win.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Here's a pro tip for you. And this
That's
is
a good
just
advice,
a pro tip for playing against this guy in particular, me. If you are nice to me, you have a better chance of winning than if you were a douchebag to me. Because as soon as you're a douchebag to me, I get so focused because there's nothing I like better than beating a douchebag. And I don't know, like,
yeah, I'm perfectly willing to play a casual game at any level. But the first time I get nitpicked, I go into overdrive. I'll come back and crush you under the rules if I have to. Like, just if someone's playing open and kind to you, there's no reason not to do it back.
Yeah.
And that's just the thing. If you set the expectation at the beginning of the game, like I sat down against Billy. Never in my life have I had a bad game against Billy from Texas. I don't believe in my life I could have a bad game against Billy from Texas. He sat down at the beginning of the game. He goes, Keith, we're playing with no takebacks whatsoever. I said, okay, because that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine if you set that expectation from the out-get, but the worst is if you expect them, don't return them, and feel that that's okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it.
Yep.
If you set your expectation from the beginning, I don't care how you do it. From any level on the spectrum of take back whatever you want to take back nothing, I don't care. As long as the expectation is set at the beginning.
Yep.
But if you change throughout the game, then you've gone from... That's just not okay.
I agree. So if you do something like, when you're winning, you allow takebacks. When you're losing, you don't. That's not okay. If you do things like, it's a minor thing, you know what I mean? Like, so it doesn't have a big impact on the game, so I let you. And then it's a major thing, so I don't. That's probably not okay.
That's hugely douchey.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope once you start giving takebacks. And
honestly, I feel good. I've cleaned my game up quite a bit. I don't take near as many things back as I used to. Like, I just play on. And I learned that from watching Chuck play. He's just like, yeah, whatever. Okay, I screwed it up. Let's go.
Learning to lose and learning to accept things as part of the tournament scene, too, I think. Because you're eventually going to get smoked or someone's going to rub you the wrong way. You just got to let it go. I see a lot of people get really worked up, you know. You get back in the car, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to stab that guy with a fork, you know? And he's just like, ah, that guy sucks. Like, and we've had players where, like, they do a star action or whatever, and the guy's like, no, I stopped star actions, and they actually could do star actions, which is really vague or whatever, you know? And then they stew over that over a long period of time. You got to let those kinds of things go, and that's a big thing with the tournament, too, is just not, like, taking it personal.
Yeah. Yep. That's good advice.
But I lose a lot, so I learned the hard way.
And I mean, the easiest way to not have hard feelings about something is if you set the expectation at the beginning. That is the number one rule for takebacks, whatever, in the tournament scene, is know what you're getting into. Because if you get to a point where you're like, it's like, yeah, I let him activate his choir first, because why would you not? And then you're like, crap, I forgot to reload Kane with Reinhold. And they're like, uh-uh. And you're like, well, it's the same thing. Like,
yeah.
Reload Kane, choir your jacks, it's exactly the same thing. They're like, mah. It's like, then that's, at that point you get mad because you didn't know that was going to happen. If at the beginning of the game it's like zero takebacks, so it's going to play it 100% rules as written, touch a model, it's been activated, etc., etc. It's like, at that point you wouldn't even ask. You're like, crap, I forgot to reload Kane. Moving on.
That's another thing, too. If you're playing a game and it's a time crunch, like, I see this happen all the time and it frustrates me. If somebody goes and they say, okay, I'm gonna go activate this or whatever, and they're like, oh, can I have allocated focus, and like nothing has really happened in the game, you know, maybe they've activated their choir and said, okay, battle these guys, oh, I meant to allocate focus, I really haven't done anything, I haven't changed my plan, but we're trying, you know, trying to play quickly, like, I don't have a problem with somebody allocating their focus.
Yeah, like, I'll frequently start my turn without collecting my fury.
Yeah.
I'll have, like, you know, and I'll be like, oh, well, I reaved, you know.
I've actually had people say, I would prefer you didn't. I'm like, okay, that's fine, and I'm okay with it. But I get a little frustrated with people because I'll just be like, all right. So clearly, you don't buy into my philosophy, which is I want to beat you in tactics. I mean, I'm just going to beat that dead horse because... it's an open information game. It is a skill based game, and some people would argue that doing things in the right order is a part of the skill, and it is. But something that is obvious, come on.
Yeah, I agree. But you can't always. It's not reasonable to expect that we can instill that philosophy into everyone.
Yeah, you just asked what we would do, so I'm sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree, and that's that. I think that is what we do.
Yeah, and then we also will respect somebody completely if they say, as long as they're upfront about it, no takebacks. Okay, good, clean game. Let's go. Like, if you sit down with Jason Flanzer, I guarantee you can expect that he will not take anything back, and you probably shouldn't ask him for any. And that's fine. I mean, that's I'm okay.
Something I'm that I like to do that sometimes has made people change their sort of mood halfway through the game is when they're making like important charges or you know just charges in general. Like I'll set proxy bases down and be like, all right, let's measure this on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like use spray templates or whatever to measure if there's a straight line, and just so you can get more accurate measurements. You know, I'll be like, put this proxy base where you want to charge. We'll see if you have enough range, you know, stuff like that. Because you know, it's a pretty common thing to, you know, mess up charge distances and stuff like that. And it's a really important part of the game. And I've had people kind of look at me like, you know, really, like, you're gonna be that, you know, strict about, like, all this stuff. And it's like, well, I don't know. I feel like that's...
I think proper execution is something completely different than takebacks, too.
Agreed.
If... In most cases, I like in a tournament setting, I have zero problems with stopping the clock to make sure that something gets executed exactly correctly if mm-hmm. it's important.
Actually, what I have a big problem with is
I guess I'm just more commenting on sort of general demeanor during the game.
Yeah, and it's a lot of these things, there's a lot of things like sending the clock back for tough checks or time thinking or placing proxy bases to ensure that things are exactly accurate, or saying, let's stop, have a judge measure this. I've seen it where players will get mad at you for it. And it's not, you're not impugning them. You're not saying, I don't think you're doing this right.
Right.
You're just saying, let's make sure we get it right.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's nothing personal about that. And that's something that I do a lot, especially. I've gotten very used to this at the tournament scene, is I'll just be like, let's have a judge measure it. It's close. Let's just have a judge measure it.
Mm-hmm.
I do that a lot because sometimes, because of the way the game plays out, there's no way to get an objective view because you're standing on one side of a table and they're standing on the other side of a table, and you're just your point of view is so different that it's like, no, you're clipping that base. No, I'm clearly not. Well, let's get a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are impartial.
Yep. And it turns out that's what they're there for.
Yep. And then
so that's kind of a different topic, I guess, but
it is
sort of similar vein.
It's just how you carry yourselves at tournaments, yep. And I think you just need to. I think consistency is the most important thing. Consistency and expectations.
And the game can be friendly. If you watch, one of my favorite parts about this game is you watch a lot of the players that are well known. The game is a very friendly game. It's not. It's competition, but it's not abrasive. Like, you watch a Jake Van Meter or a Chuck play, you know, or a Keith Christensen play.
I do my best. Will not set me up on a pedestal here.
Right. I feel like that's one of my strengths. I mean, generally pretty friendly. Unless it's somebody I don't like.
Like me?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't like you. I don't like playing with you because you and I go to a very dark place that is just not a comfortable thing at all. I don't know why that is. We should fix that.
I have a theory about why that is. We can talk about it later.
All right. That probably will be very enlightening.
So, I think that pretty much covers it.
I think so. There you go, JD. Do unto others.
Yep.
You're pretty much in a nutshell.
Yep.
Think that wraps us up?
Sure.
Unless we want to talk.
Keith is writing something.
There's no need to bring pen and ink into this. This is a podcast.
Keith is passing a note to John.
This isn't D&D.
It's just a question about Kador stuff.
Oh, I feel like we covered a lot of Kador stuff in this. We'll go into that more.
I didn't want to say it and then not do it, but I guess that we're just there.
All right, well, let's do that other question.
Quick, Lance, cut this out.
No. Don't cut this out. What was the question?
I don't remember.
Hold on.
What's he going to do now? Is he going to cut it?
Was like,
is he not going to cut
just
it?
Just like talk about Kador.
Here we go. I will read the question. Hey, Muse crew. First off, love the podcast. By the way, major kudos to anybody that says they love the podcast. That always helps us. You've been helping me stay invested in the game after, and this is from Kevin Jacobson, after moving away from my meta and ended up in Cleveland. Very sorry you ended up in Cleveland. Bastard. Yeah. At least you're not in Madison, where I've had difficulty finding a suitable place to play. That being said, I would be interested to hear a bit more about K-Door. Specifically, what do you not like to see across the table? I know, IFK, Ozzy, etc. But I'm wondering about any combination of models or casters that are difficult. Additionally, any sweet COD or tech tips would be loved. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Aeon on the boards. The
damn Winter Guard. Or not Winter Guard. Widowmakers. I don't like them.
The Yulons with Evlad's feet. Those jam quick. And they can get crazy angles on you.
So things that I don't... That I think I should see more of that I don't. The Winter Guard long rifles.
Yes.
The Rifle Corps. Winter Guard Rifle Corps. Those guys are very, very effective.
Especially with P-Butcher.
Yeah, they're ridiculous with him.
P-Butcher gun lines are terrifying.
They really are. They really, really are.
They super are.
Yeah.
And it's not like closing in on him is a brilliant idea, because it turns out Butcher is still back there somewhere.
So he loves nothing more than just being like, feet, kill two jacks, by myself.
I'm still iron fleshed, so I'm still invincible.
Yeah.
And now I'm in cover, so I'm like defensive trillion.
Oh, man. Butcher's pretty sweet.
Honestly, I kind of like seeing Chaosies.
Go ahead.
Because I kill them. I play a lot of blast damage. I play Kreos with just feats, and they all die. I mean, they do nothing.
I feel like the world's kind of got a plan for Chaosies now.
Well, it's the problem with Iron Fleshed Infantry, Chaosies, whatever your flavor is, Nis Hunters, they get caught in the blast damage of people dealing with Kricks. They're like, holy crap, I got to sweep infantry. And I got to be able to deal with Satixis Raiders, who are really fast and really annoying to shoot or try and kill. So I think need ways that don't necessarily rely on getting past defense to kill them. And so people are like, well, you know, whatever their solution is, tends to splash onto Cador infantry. And so they just get taken off the table as, you know, part of the course.
Yeah. And Kazi, I mean, really, other than being difficult to kill, unimpressive threat ranges. Just 9 inches is not good. It's okay.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I kind of like them. I can predict where they're going to be, and they usually end up dying before they do anything.
Yeah, usually they have to sort of jam up onto you and then hope that they survive just on their ridiculously high defense. And then they mini-feet and dig in. Mm-hmm.
They hit hard, but not very hard. There's just... They're very manageable. Much like... I would liken them to burrowers. Something that... But they're more expensive. It's something that once you know how to deal with, you just consistently can deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you honestly, and I feel like this is, I get a sense that Cotter kind of feels stuck in a rut, because a lot of their lists start with Iron Flesh plus whatever insert high defense thing here, whether it's Nis or it's Winter Guard sometimes, you know, particularly with Bob and Weave, or whether it's whatever. So they put a lot of infantry on the table, and then they sort of salt to taste with whatever their casters are. And I feel like the things that bother me more, like when we talked about Epic Vlad, threat saturation, you're like, there's all this stuff that comes screaming across the table at you that will kill your caster, particularly in a kill box scenario or something where you're just like, I need a place to hide, or just kill everything that you love, right? You can do that too with Evlad, it turns out. Oh, that's another thing, too. Riflemen are really good with him. Hand of Fate on Winter Guard Riflemen is not fair.
Yeah. Chaosy are fine with him, too, because it turns out when you're threat saturating, the Chaosy are something that you might not necessarily be able to deal with.
I agree with that 100%.
One of the problems with the standard Chaosy is that they are the only Vanguard. Like, they come up on their own.
Yeah, in front of the Winter Guard.
Right, intending to survive entirely on their own merits, which they can't reasonably do. But when there's also a unit of Iron Fang piping smashed in and a unit of Ulans out flanking and some Doom Reavers hanging around, all of a sudden those 10 Chaosy that just ran up into your face are a little bit more of a problem.
Yeah, same thing like Hoffman's Doom Reaver list. It's got like 42 Doom Reavers in it with E. Butch. Turns out that's a thing. Like, that to me is scary in that... He just asks you a question. Can you kill all these guys before they get there? And they have 11-inch threat. And there's a lot of them. So, and it doesn't take very many for them start
to do something serious. And I feel like you shouldn't play both of those lists. That's not a good 1-2, Vlad and Butcher.
Oh, I agree with you.
But
they do similar things.
Having one of your lists be a threat saturation is not a bad plan. Is actually a really good plan for Kador. Because, again, you get into that rut where it's like, well, both of my lists are some tough-to-kill infantry with a little bit of guns behind it, and it's all kind of balanced, and it plays this very vanilla attrition game. It's like, well, if you run into someone that just runs, that steamrolls you right over when you're trying to play that game, you need something that can punch back in a way. So I feel like you can play your standard Kador fare, like that sort of epic Sorsha concoction we were talking about earlier, which is, in its own way, a very standard Kador.
It's a very good all-comers list.
It's an all-comers, which Kador does
strong.
Well.
Yeah.
And then you switch into something like the Butcher or the Butcher or the Vlad list that's like, what's your plan? And then they're like, and then they look at the both of them, and then you create more interesting choices. When you present two lists that function similarly, you're always going to be playing a bad matchup.
Right, as long as your opponent's paying attention, because they will have thought about how do I deal with the standard Kador fare. The other thing I feel like Kador could do really well, that I don't see as much of, is making really good gun lines. Like, P. Vlad gun lines are retarded.
Yep.
And in a list that I played against at TembleCon this past year that I really haven't seen come out is Flanzer's Harkovich list gave me fits. Because it turns out a turn of 7-point armor, 23 Kador jacks is really annoying to deal with.
Because
there's 7 points, and that's what he vanguards.
And speed 6.
Yeah, and that's what he vanguards his list with. So you're just like, well, I can maybe kill one. And then whatever I use to kill one, it's probably 2 jacks, because 1 jack, you just don't 1-round armor 23 jacks, and there's no way really to reduce that armor. I mean, you're just like, at least for me, I can't like dispel a buff or something silly. And so I kill a 7-point jack, and I trade like 15 points of jacks for it. That's what I'm looking at. I'm like, ah. And I'm playing Efiora, and I hit as hard as anybody on the planet, and I'm still like struggling with all of these Kador jacks.
And that comes down to, again, bring your all-comers list, and then bring something a little different.
Yeah.
Or something completely different.
Something to give your opponent something to think about. So they're just like, well, I think they're going to drop Sorsha, but God, if they drop Harkovich, or my goodness, if they drop this threat saturation list, I have, you can sort of determine your matchups a little bit.
This worked better back in the old days of no divide and conquer, but it's still effective now.
Yep, agree. But yeah, get out of the box. Start thinking about other things you can do. P. Vlad gunline is really good. P. Butch gunline is really good. But if you're going to go gunline, like, sell out to do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yep. Bring the Iron Flesh, or bring the Harkovich, Valachev Nis Hunters. Bring the Winter Guard Rifle Corps. Bring a mortar or two. Like, turns out those guys are just fine. Do they tilt some matchups too?
Yeah. I feel like the big strength is that they can make just really versatile armies.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Yeah, they bring their one very versatile all-comers list, but I feel like if they bring two of those, they're always going to be
They end up
behind.
Looking like the same list.
Sure.
Like two units of infantry and whatever.
But I mean, you can make a socialist. You can make an e-socialist that can pretty much deal with almost anything in the game.
Right.
I agree. And then you just bring in that other list to tweak your opponents into making bad matchups for your socialist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do a lot of... I mean, you've just got, like, it's basically just the flavor of the way you want to play it. Like, you could go, like, ridiculous threat range with Strakov, You could go over-the-top armor-piercing with Butcher,
Ryan Meeson's got a list that I want to try. So ridiculous. Ryan from Minnesota. He's mm-hmm. the best ganger up there. Mm-hmm. It's P. Vlad, Double Conquest... Is it double battle engine or just one? I can't remember. Let's see. It's 19.
I don't think you can fit that many.
38, 47, 56. So, yeah, it's one battle engine and then, like, mechanics, a Colden Lord. But signs importance plus all those AoEs, like, make infantry melt.
Yeah.
Those jacks are super fast on his feet turn and smash stuff, like... It looks like it'd be fun to play. I don't know if it'd be any good.
It looks like it probably would be fun.
It actually might be pretty effective in that. How do you
dig through? You could do something like feet first turn, and then have them run 16 inches and just be in the middle of the table. Like, what up? Yeah. Come to us.
Well, I mean, you think about it, too. What's particularly scary about that list is they can sit back and shoot your infantry. And then when it comes to, like, killing stuff that can kill two Colossals, like, with his feet, they can get the Alpha.
Yeah.
And you also have, like, somewhat placeable rough terrain, too. So, like, I was just thinking about it as a Menoth player. I was like, ew. I'm going to get a Colossal that's going to kill at least one heavy. So I'm down a heavy already, and then I've got to kill this Colossal, and then I have another one coming in.
And then after you, if you can somehow chew through all of that, you've still got Vlad.
Yeah.
Standing out there.
Right. So
being Vlad.
I don't know. It's just one of those things.
That guy's not super easy to kill.
With Ford Awesomes to hand to yeah. like hide in.
Exactly.
So that's a list I would test.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, and I actually think it might be pretty strong, but I got to see it on the table.
I think the big thing that I would say to Kador players is get out of the box at the moment. Like, I see it's really bland right now. When I see Kador, it's always the same. It's like one list has the Winter Guard, one list has the Nis, both lists have Kayazi. Mix it up a little bit because we're ready for it. Believe you me, those of us that have been on the tournament scene are certainly ready for the standard Kador fare. We've seen
I'd say,
times before.
Step a little bit farther outside of the box than Karchev.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because that's just sort of, I don't know, I feel like you can do a lot. He's good, but I feel like you can do sort of the same vein with other, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
More versatile. I don't know. Anyway, we're...
That's just generally a good tip from us in general is step out of the box. We love out of the box here.
Yeah, we build all kinds of crazy stuff. You should see some of the Menoth lists I'm working on now. They're not like my lists at all.
Next week, we'll bring back the dojo. Hopefully, we'll have... next week, I suppose we'll have some... Will we have Gen Con news already?
No, next week when we record, we'll have Chunky Cast.
Oh, gosh.
The Chunky Cast.
Next week, look for the dojo and the Chunkster.
And then we're going to have an After Dark where Chunky and Dewey try and have a gross out off or something. I don't know. I'm sure that'll be epically awful.
Ugh. I win.
It's like Dewey from Down Under. All right. I'm going to sign off for the night. Keith?
John?
Chad?
Dewey. And if I can get your best Charlton Heston voice, we'll get one more dick punch body slam. Are you ready?
Charlton Heston?
Yep. What do I do, God?
I don't know what he sounds like.
That's the guy from the Planet of the Apes.
Okay, the epic fail. Let's go ahead and let's try this again.
Lance, cut this out.
Let's go with your best English accent. Are you ready?
My best. Crap. Hold up.
What, really? You have to center yourself?
Do a voice. Just do a voice. Are you ready?
Sure.
Do Mickey Mouse.
That's creepy. What do I do, God?
Dick punch, body slam.
Yeah, we should have just said Holy Grail. Right? Monty Python. Like, why don't we just start with that? That would have
God voice. That is what I would have gone with.
All right, I'm out.
It would fade out. We do fades now.
Yeah, whatever.